I'll say the world.
Thank you, Steve.
Steve, will you do me a favor? When you write your book, and you will eventually write your book, please call it I'll Say the World. Please.
It will be I'll Said the World. Because I'll be looking back.
Right. It'll be past tense.
Yes. I'll Said the World.
I will explain. If you didn't hear, was that earlier this week? Was it
last week?
Okay. And if you didn't listen to the show, go. Why aren't you listening to our full shows at WGNradio.com? Do it. We'll wait.
Binge listen. They're all up there. Listen to them all in sequence.
You don't even have to in sequence. It's not like one leads into the other one.
Yeah, I guess.
We throw stuff up there every day to see what sticks. It's all different.
Right.
But Steve Bertrand said, I'll say the world, and we all questioned that phrase. And he's like, what do you think? I made it up? And we're like, yeah.
Because in our lifetimes, I can't speak for you, but I've met dozens of people, and none of them have ever said that phrase, ever. Not one time. And we did have people call up.
One person texted and said his 91-year-old father had said that.
At one point, yeah.
And he was no longer with us, so thanks for making me smile.
Right. Someone told me, and I don't. Maybe this is where it comes from, that Judy Markey used it on the air over the weekend.
That's what I was bringing up, because that's where you got it, obviously. So we need to go to Judy Markey and find out where she got it.
She might have gotten it from me, you know.
It's possible. Maybe she heard you say it and said, well, that's what the kids are saying. Now I'm going to say it.
Noise.
I have, Steve, since you brought that to the show, your phrase, I'll say the world.
Still don't get it.
I don't understand it either, but I have tried to find places where I should say it. Like, things have happened to me since, and I go, is this when I say it?
I don't know when to use it.
One day you'll find it just spewing forth from your mouth, and you'll be like, that's the perfect time.
I guess so. Mm-hmm. All right.
I have to think about it too much. I always forget what it is. Is it I'll save the world? I have to double think.
I'll save the world makes so much more sense.
That's impossible, though.
You can't, right.
You can't save the world. You can say the world.
You mean just the phrase the world?
World. The world.
Yeah, I'll say the world.
The world. Yeah.
What does it mean?
It's like an affirmation. You're like, I know, right? I'll say the world.
It's way hipper than I know, right? I'll say the world.
Everyone says, I know, right?
From now on, instead of I-K-R, they're going to put I-S-T-W.
All right, say this. The OA is a really interesting show. Someone say that to me.
The OA is a really interesting show.
I'll say the world.
Oh, so it's just a term of agreement.
Yeah,
like,
it's an affirmation kind of.
Couldn't you just say yes?
That would
Nothing's
save
easy
time.
With Bertrand. Come on.
No color and yes.
Does it ever?
Sure.
Does it ever hit you as funny that there was a time here in this country, in the United States of America, that people said the phrase 23 skidoo, and they said it with like impact, like 23 skidoo, like how about that, what I just said? What?
I don't get that either, because I get hurry up or let's get going. Isn't that kind of what it means? But
no,
where?
How do you explain what it means? I've seen.
I don't know. That's why I asked the question.
I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. This was a phrase that was popular in the late 1940s, I guess. I've had older relatives who have said, yeah, back then we used to say 23 skidoo. And I'd go, oh, why'd you say that? And then nobody knows why. It was just something that was mandated by the government that from time to time we citizens had to say 23 skidoo. Why did they choose 23?
That's my question. Why wouldn't it be 24? Are they referring to the hours in the day? Like there are 23 hours, and then that last hour you get the heck out of there. You skedaddle, if you will.
I don't think so.
It isn't certain how 23 skidoo originated. There are numerous competing theories, which is a sure sign of doubt. It seems that 23 originated as a fad term in the USA in the early 20th century. God, this is just
going
to confuse me more.
It doesn't explain it. But I like that they singled out America, because in other parts of the country, or the world, think about if we went abroad and started saying it, the foreigners would go, we don't have time for your skidooing. We don't have time for your 23 skidoo.
Well, it's an idiom, right? The beauty of those is that you can't, you know,
can't pinpoint the real. Yeah, I guess so. But it was like a.
Right, I guess so. I guess you can make that one work. I guess that is the case. I guess so.
It became a craze to just say it. Just say
they didn't have the internet back then. There was nothing to do.
I know. I don't think. I guess that's the case, right?
You know, I'm on phrases.org, and this is one place I did not look up I'll Say the World.
See if it's on there.
I'm pretty excited. Are
See
we all
if
gonna
Steve
wait?
Gets a mention.
This is such a big start to your show.
The show hasn't started yet.
Oh, good. Okay.
This is just pregame.
Really, you've already lost my wife. She gets very angry.
When you say it. What's the look you get when you say it at home? What does she do?
Well, if I can see her, it's an eye roll. If she's not inside, I just hear her foot hit the ground. It's a stomp.
So you do it mostly just to get her upset, to rile her
no,
up?
No, not at all. I try to hold back, but sometimes it's just, you know, it's a perfect moment for it. I'll say the world it is, Steve.
A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
But that actually kind of makes sense. That one makes sense. And I'm not telling people who are listening to go out and grab a bird either flying by or in a bush, but I'm saying that one, you go, it's more valuable to have something than hope that I have something.
That hope you have more.
Right.
Right. It's better to have a lesser but certain advantage than the possibility of a greater one that may come to nothing.
That makes sense. That's sensible, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that one makes sense.
I'm going to start using that.
But how about phrases that contradict each other? For instance, you have a phrase, look before you leap, which is wise. Don't just jump into something. Look around and make sure it's safe. But then there's another one that says, he who hesitates is lost, which is the exact opposite of that one.
Different circumstances.
Yeah, I guess so. But do you know that at the time?
I don't sit there and think of these.
When you're either going to leap or hesitate?
I don't sit there and go through, okay, should I leap or should
hesitate.
I? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really go through the phrases. Dave, you know about 23 Skidoo?
Yeah, I'm at an age where I used to hear it from my mom all the time.
When would your mom say it? What would have to happen for your mom to say 23 Skidoo?
My mom was born, put it this way, my mom was born in 1907, my dad in 1905.
Oh, wow.
Back in the roaring 20s, after World War I, things got pretty hot. We would refer to 23 Skidoo today along the lines of something like, hey, that's pretty hot. You know, back then you were talking about chemise dresses and Charleston and all that good stuff, and it was just like, hey, 23 Skidoo.
So was it for the year 1923, since it started in the 20s?
It was just related to the 20s. 23 Skidoo was just kind of like, you know, going into the 20s, or into the roaring 20s, so to speak. There's another one that my dad used to say all the time, which was just about as much fun. We would say something the other day along the same lines, like, hey, that's pretty cool. I like that. Hey, that's nice. That's cool. One of the ones he used to say when things got pretty fantastic was, wow, that's the nuts.
That's the nuts.
Like, yeah, that's the nuts. And I was like,
didn't right. people also say if something was cool, they would say that's the ginchiest? I've heard people say the ginchiest.
Yeah, or it's just ginchy.
Yeah.
Neato Keen.
Neato and Keen.
Yeah, Neato Keen, all the above. They're just little catchphrases of the day, like, you know, like today we would say, or the kids today would say something like, you know, hey, wow, you know, that's really bad.
Yeah.
I think that one's already
passed by. Yeah. Yeah.
Fast forward yourself a little bit, Dave, and thank you very much for calling.
Had my hair in a ponytail again there.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
If any of you have ever seen the movie Donnie Brasco, they use the term forget about it for everything.
Oh, sure.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. That's like an East Coast crime thing.
Yeah, exactly. It had several different meanings. It was kind of stupid, but they made it work.
Yeah. That's an all-purpose phrase.
That is.
Say it whenever you need it. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Joe.
All right. No problem. Bye.
We are wordsmiths today.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't have any explanation to 23 Skidoo, and I've been skidooing all over the internet.
I can't figure it out, and I've had people explain it to me, and whenever the explanation's done, like our last caller, I know less about it than when I started.
I thought it meant to skedaddle, like 23 Skidoo means,
no,
we got a 23 Skidoo, get out of here.
No, it's more like a term of, aren't things great?
Then just say that.
I would say that over 23 Skidoo.
312-981-7200. It is Bill F. It is Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. I'll say the world.
It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. We're trying to figure out why in the world people would walk around saying 23 Skidoo. I have one or two more. If you have a website that explains these.
Yes, but can I just give you the 23 Skidoo?
Oh, yeah, please.
Because I thought it was like a form of skedaddle, and that's what one of these suggestions is. It came from a cartoonist. in 1902, and it was a variant form of skedaddle. But you say it means a good time, and this makes sense. This phrase, 23 skidoo, originated in the Panamint Mountains in Death Valley in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
That's the perfect timing right there. The mining town of Skidoo had 23 saloons. And if you were going to get drunk, you would try to get a drink at each of the saloons. This started the phrase of going 23 skidoo if you were going to have a good time.
Of all the options I've ever heard for that phrase, that makes the most sense.
I totally agree with you.
I wonder how many people who said it knew the derivation of it.
Also, another one is in Charles Dickens' Tale of Two Cities. Sidney Carton is number 23 of a multitude executed by the guillotine. And a woman sits at the foot of the guillotine. And as he meets his fate, the old woman just emotionlessly says 23 as he's beheaded. But that would be 23 headless or something. It wouldn't be skidoo.
The national phrase was not 23 beheaded people. It was 23 skidoo. Is skidoo a beheaded person? Maybe. Does that explain it? I don't think it is.
No, but I'm going to look up skidoo. Where was
on its
that
own?
Town in Death Valley?
Because
that makes really a lot of sense.
Yep.
That's the only time that has ever made sense.
Did you ever hear somebody described, and I think this is from the 40s, as the cat's pajamas? Where would that one have come from?
Yeah, I only had one cat. He never wore pajamas.
No, cats do not wear pajamas. My grandmother used to say this a lot. She would say, that's the cutest thing since Coca-Cola. And we would all just look at each other because, although delicious and refreshing, it's not that cute.
No, but now that makes me think of cute as a button, and that derived from the fact that buttons used to be very ornamental pretty. So, you know, if people go to about your baby, oh, cute as a button, you're thinking, a button's not really that cute,
right.
But they used to be.
Right.
They used to be very ornamental. Bob has another explanation for 23 skidoo. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Yeah, actually, I'm kind of liking that one about the saloons.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
It does. But what I heard was that down in the less, I don't know, the less well-to-do sections of, was either Brooklyn or New York, on the 23rd block was the beat of an extremely mean street cop.
Yeah.
And when he would come around the corner, it would go from person to person to person to person that everybody on that block would skidoo or skedaddle.
They would leave because he was coming and they didn't want trouble.
Right. And then after that, it morphed into a kind of very quick two-step that the flappers would use during the 20s as a dance. And that became how it became cool. It became, you know, something that was on the cutting edge.
Yeah. Interesting. All right.
I like that, Bob. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
There is a Skidoo, California, by the way.
Oh, there is?
It was founded by two minors.
Two little kids?
No, ER, not OR, but thank
Kevin,
you.
Get Jay Gatsby on the line.
Danny, you have another explanation for 23 Skidoo? It is 2017, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was just the speakeasies. If you weren't 23, you had a Skidoo.
No, because the drinking
21?
Age was never 23.
Yeah, it's like old cartoons, even from Ray Rayner. With the knocking on doors at 23, he had a skidoo. But the other explanations are pretty good, too.
All right.
That's what I thought it was. All right, thanks.
All right, well, thank you very much.
We'll never know.
I don't think it was the last one. I don't think.
No, because the drinking never been age, 23.
Right, they would have been 21 skidoo then.
And it might have been even 18 at some point.
Right, right,
18
right.
Skidoo. It doesn't have a ring to it.
No, no. All right, we need to take a break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot coming up on today's show, so stay here. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Wednesday, January 25th, we throw the keys to the WGN Hometown Voices Caravan to Justin Kaufman. He sets his course for Crystal Lake. Join Justin for great conversation, gourmet comfort food, and a live broadcast of The Download.
That's my hometown.
January 25th from 7 to 10 p.m. at Duke's Ale House in Crystal Lake. He'll be doling out restaurant gift certificates and ski lift passes to Wilmot Mountain. Visit the events page at WGNradio.com for details. The WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour is presented, as always, by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands.
Interest rates are rising fast. This is your last chance to get a rate near historic lows. You need to visit BrightPath.com first. If you watch the news, all indications are that interest rates will keep going up in the new year with the economy. While you cannot control what the economy is going to do, it's crucial to take care of the important things that you can control, like your mortgage at BrightPath.com. You need to make sure your mortgage is secure with BrightPath Mortgage. They're the no-cost mortgage experts, and BrightPath.com can secure 30-year rates in the low fours, with 15-year rates even lower, and all with no closing costs. BrightPath.com can save you thousands with no closing costs. If it's a mortgage, follow the BrightPath to savings right now. Call 800-490-1956. That's 800-490-1956. Or visit BrightPath.com now. That's BrightPath.com. NMLS number 177208, NMLSConsumerAccess.org.
This winter, turn off the smartphones and gather the family around the original social networking device, your fireplace. Get your fireplace safe and sound with the pros at Lindeman Chimney at CleanFireplace.com.
Make your resolution to get deeper, more restful sleep in 2017. Ditch that poorly constructed, worn-out pillow that you've been sleeping on for years. It is time to experience a MyPillow. I love my MyPillow. Try one out. If you don't believe it's the best pillow ever, you can return it within 60 days for a full refund. No questions asked. Join the millions of other people who are sleeping better than ever. MyPillow's patented interlocking fill gives you the exact support you need, regardless of your sleep position. And right now, through the end of January, MyPillow will give you two queen MyPillow premiums and two go-anywhere pillows for just $99.98. That's right, four pillows for under $100, $99.98. This offer will not last long, though, so call 800-299-9579, or you can go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, use promo code WGN, and you're good to go. That's MyPillow.com, or call 800-299-9579. Don't forget that promo code WGN. MyPillow is guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you have ever owned, 800-299-9579.
Hard to believe, but Valentine's Day is less than a month away. We have not only a great Valentine's idea for you, a very romantic one, but you can win something and really charm your loved one, one of your loved ones.
Smooth as silk, that's what you are.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'm charmed already.
That was my goal.
You're so romantic.
My goal was to charm either
one
of you.
Honey, I will charm you now.
It is time for you to be charmed.
Prepare to be charmed, hence the charming commences.
And de-charming.
Stepping down.
Time for the news. It's sponsored by VictoryAutoWreckers.com. Here's Steve.
There were 193 bank robberies in the area last year. That's up 30% from 2015. But about the same as 2014. Crews responding to a fire in the River North parking garage found a person burned to death this morning. Happened just before 6 in the 300 block of North LaSalle. And even as the election outcome intensifies America's abortion debate, a new survey finds the annual number of abortions in the U.S. has dropped to well under a million, the lowest level since 1974. The report was released today by the Guttmacher Institute. It's a research group that supports abortion rights. We'll check your money, sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We have a couple of loose ends to wrap up. Loose end number one, I can't remember if we talked about this. I know we talked about it separately, but I don't know if we talked about it with everybody on the air.
We didn't.
But we didn't, did we?
No, we never got to it.
All right. The inauguration is coming up on Friday, although I guess the big party with people performing, I believe, is Thursday, right? Is that correct?
Who's performing now? I'm confused.
It's not that vast of a list. It's a very small list. And what keeps happening is people who agree to perform then rescind. Like Jennifer Holliday said, yeah, I'll do it. I would like to come in and do it. And then her fans, I guess, either texted her or tweeted her or do what fans do, drop by her house and said, we don't think you should do this. This isn't a good move. So she said, okay, then I won't do it. Then Marie Osmond said, hey, I'll do it.
But and they then, didn't ask her.
And then, yeah, it was pointed out to Marie that nobody asked her.
That's sad. They can't get anybody to perform. She's volunteering and they're not taking her.
They asked Kevin, our producer, to come and sing the Cars for Kids song. And he's like, I can't take the day off. I can't get the day off.
Well, I understand that.
Well, one of the bands that was set to perform is a band called the B Street Band. And if you're listening, you go, oh, no, you're saying it wrong. It's the E Street Band. That's Bruce Springsteen's guys. they're going to perform? Because that's weird, because Bruce Springsteen doesn't really like Donald Trump.
And has made it so public for so long.
He's talked about it regularly since Donald Trump threw his hat into the ring, that Bruce Springsteen does not like Donald Trump, doesn't want him to be the president.
And he's bubbled over very recently saying some pretty strong words that would make you know he's not a Trump supporter.
Right. And the most ironic thing about Bruce Springsteen is a lot of times political campaigns will use the song Born in the USA as like a backdrop for their platform, for their beliefs. And then Bruce Springsteen always says it's the funniest thing in the world because if you really listen to what that song is, it's not the idyllic song about being born in the USA. It's the problems that we have here in this country. So they're not understanding my music. He gets very frustrated by that.
Well, that just shows they're just going for the hook.
Right, right.
You know?
That's it. Well, now the band that I'm referring to, the B Street Band, this is a Bruce Springsteen cover band.
B for Bruce, probably.
B for Bruce. They are also not going to be performing at the inauguration.
And they signed a contract. And I thought that was really weird. We ran out of time and didn't. We have a pile of papers and we never got to it. I thought it was weird because this is a Bruce Springsteen tribute band, which means they love and idolize Bruce Springsteen, knowing full well, I knew full well, that Bruce was not a supporter of Trump. I thought it was shocking that they agreed to it.
I'm just guessing here, but it's probably one of those things. I had never heard of the B Street Band until last week. I don't know that you had ever heard of the B Street Band, and I think it's safe to assume that most of America had never heard of them. But all of a sudden, their name's in the paper, their name's on the internet, they're going to perform, they're getting a lot of notoriety, which is, if you're in the music business, it's a good thing.
Yeah, but if you're really idolizing the guy that you've made a tribute band to, it's kind of going against his wishes.
Right. So, that's why, because you and I had a Proclaimers tribute band for a while, and we'd always check with the Proclaimers to see if they liked a particular politician.
But here's the thing. We only did one song
for
2 hours.
Right. And they'd have to sing it, because you couldn't understand them when they spoke.
Right.
It's accent.
Hard to understand.
Heaver.
Right.
Heaver in without you.
Yeah.
You have the statement that they made, because that's what's interesting to me. With deepest apologies to our fans and the New Jersey Inaugural Ball Committee, the B Street Band is withdrawing from performing at this year's inauguration gala, or do you say gala? Our decision is based solely on the respect and gratitude we have for Bruce and the E Street Band. So why wouldn't they have respected that?
Originally?
Yes.
That's
our band would not exist without the talents of Bruce and our E Street brothers. We are most grateful to these rock legends and look forward to many more years of emulating and performing the forever music of Bruce Springsteen. Did they do this so they got some recognition, knowing full well they'd back out?
I don't want to sound jaded, but
it's a good.
If I did want to sound jaded, I would say, yeah, that's
a good
because they
business
win
move.
On both sides of the coin, don't they?
Not with the Donald.
They get the notoriety. No, not with Donald Trump, but they get the notoriety that they were hoping for. Everybody hears their name. And then they make Bruce Springsteen fans happy by snubbing their nose at the inauguration and saying, well, upon further review, no, we're not going to perform.
Well, now I want to go see him because that's a really good business move.
It's going to be an interesting inauguration because in the past, almost every time they've done one of these parties, people are knocking each other over to perform because it's a great platform. And this time around, they're really having a hard time.
I mean, just think of it. You're talking about a cover band that's backing out.
I know.
Right?
I know.
Mean, it's not even someone who's...
Right. That's how deep this is buried.
And I heard, I don't know if it was with Dean this morning, that Steven Van Zandt, your close personal friend that you hugged.
I hug him from time to time. If he's in the area, I will hug. Yeah, they'll be hugged by me.
Two of the least likely huggable people, quite honestly.
Wendy, there's no rhyme and reason for who I hug. If the mood is in me to give somebody a hug, I can't prevent that hug from happening. And both of those guys got a hug.
It was lovely. It was a lovely embrace. Steven Van Zandt said, you know, hey, you know, I respect what they decide to do. They can do whatever they want. But, you know, I'm sure he's relieved that they bailed on it. And call to Marie Osmond. They're looking for performances now.
Here's a scene right now somewhere in Utah. Marie Osmond just sitting in a den staring at a phone going, come on, just ring.
Paper roses. Right. She's practicing.
Right.
I'm a little bit country.
And then the phone rings and she picks it up. Hello? Alan?
She's her brother.
She's got the purple socks for whoever will share with her.
Right.
Lead singer of the B Street Band, Will Forte, not the actor.
Not the actor, Will Forte.
Come on, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's his name.
They're a cover band and the guy's got someone else's name?
Yeah.
Well, it's his name. It's just he shares it.
Spelled the same way?
Yeah.
Well,
there's another Bill Leff who's a, you know, aerial stunt guy.
He's an incredible pilot.
He's funny. I've seen him fly.
Lead singer Will Forte, not the actor, told Rolling Stone that its plan to play the nonpartisan event took on a different tone this year as Springsteen fans lashed out after word came out that they would play the event. So maybe that had something to do with it. Like, did you say Jennifer Holliday? Was it Holliday?
Yeah, Jennifer Holliday. Not Jennifer Hudson.
Okay.
Jennifer Holliday.
And they said, you know, they signed a contract, so if they lose the money or have to pay, they will do it, but they're backing out because the publicity they got from this is well worth the amount that they're paying.
Now, Wendy, I don't know what to make of this, but apparently there's a band called the C Street Band that is a cover band of the B Street Band, and they are entertaining the offer to perform at the inauguration.
And Daryl Hammond is the lead singer.
But not that Daryl Hammond.
Not the actor.
No.
A different guy named Daryl Hammond.
Pat, your thoughts on this?
I kind of disagree with what the band has done, as well as that young lady who the singer is.
Jennifer Holliday.
I didn't know her name. But I think that what you're experiencing in this country is an entire group of people that are caught up in peer pressure, and if it's in style to dislike President-elect Trump and say things about it because some of the more A-list celebrities are doing it, that's fine. But I believe that here's two groups, or here's a singer and a group that really not too many of us knew about. I didn't, and I like Bruce Springsteen, and they would have gotten a lot of notoriety, and I would have watched them, and I would probably look for them on the internet to see where they might be playing in the future. I think it's a big mistake because of just peer pressure at this point in time, and that's unfortunate because we have very few free thinkers in this country anymore.
Pat, what about this, though? If your fan base, let's say you're a performer, and your fan base is in disagreement with your move. In the case of Jennifer Holliday, she has a very large LGBT following, and they were very adamant that they're not a fan of Trump. So she said, well, if my fans don't want me to do it, it would really be a bad move for me career-wise. Do you agree with that or disagree with that?
I disagree with that because the music moves you. They'll get over it. I mean, as soon as all of it passes and Mr. President-elect Trump sticks his foot in it or doesn't or does do well, it's all going to be passed, and when they're bopping around the apartment or the house listening to her music, they're not worried about whether or not she performed at the inauguration or not. I kind of
agree with that. You know, like, you know, if Bono was going to perform somewhere and his fans said, you know, I don't agree with this, don't do it, Bono would say, then don't buy my records, and they still would. I don't think Bono, Ted Nugent is a big fan, and he's not going to, you know, if his fans reached out and said, come on, Motor City Madman, I don't like Donald Trump, don't do it. He'd be like, where's my bow and arrow? I will just shoot you.
Oh.
Right. I mean, I kind of agree.
Look at all the A-list celebrity movie stars. Does that mean we're not going to go see Tom Hanks or we're not going to go see, you know, whoever else, Meryl Streep? You know, Meryl Streep made a statement at the Golden Globes. Okay, fine. It was, you know, if you're grounded in reality, so what? That's her opinion. She's entitled to it.
Sure.
And that doesn't mean that I think she's one of the greatest actresses that the world has ever seen.
Overrated.
I see her movies. Yeah.
And the B Street Band?
Overrated.
Yeah. You withdraw? No, you're fired. That's the story. Yeah. Pat, we thank you for
calling.
Thanks,
Pat.
Take care.
All right, you too. Thanks.
I agree with them. Like, maybe they shouldn't have signed up in the first place.
It's curious that they signed up in the first place.
Yeah, see, that's
based on what you said, which is if you're that big of a fan of Springsteen and he's the reason that your band exists, you should know his politics and how he feels. That's peculiar.
And if Jennifer Holliday was aware of the fact that her major target demo is the LGBTQ community,
yeah,
and she knows maybe that wouldn't be a great mix. Maybe right. she shouldn't have signed up in the first place.
Yeah, it's very curious, isn't it? All right. This and other topics, if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 gets it done. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Let me quickly catch you up. The inauguration is coming up on Friday. They're having a huge gala or gala, depending on whichever you want.
Gala.
Gala. so far, if you're keeping track of the program, you had Jennifer Holliday for a while, and then she reconsidered. She's not doing it. You had Marie Osmond for a while, kind of. She said she'd do it, but they didn't ask her to do it.
That's
so she's
pathetic.
Not going to do it. I know.
Pick me, pick me, pick me. No.
Especially since nobody will follow through and do the show. If you're Marie Osmond, you're like, remember the part where I said I would do the show? No, Marie, we have other things planned. And then the B Street Band, this is a Bruce Springsteen cover band, had also agreed to do the show, but then they have since rescinded. They will not be performing. And we said, we don't even know about this band, the B Street Band, but do you know who does? Our friend Judy Pilak does.
They are very good.
Where did you see them, Judy?
Okay, groupie chick.
Over there, down there, at the...
At House of Blues?
Yes, thank you. House
You're
of
welcome.
Blues. Yeah, they were really, really good.
Really? Yeah. How long ago was this?
Probably about... 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, cover bands, there are a bunch of Led Zeppelin cover bands, and I love them. I never got to see Led Zeppelin, so.
Yeah, they're always good. I mean, the Beatles, there's a Beatles one.
There are probably
yeah.
30.
Yeah, there's like one that's around here that plays a lot. So, yeah, they were very good.
Judy, why would you go see them and not see my band, Dexy's 12 O'Clock Racers?
I've seen them.
Oh, my God.
Also at the House of Blues.
Right, we did a House of Blues night.
Come on, Bill.
We had a bunch of people come
da.
On. I can't do it now. Ask
that
Kef
was at the House of Give 'em the Blues.
Right. Right.
House of I've Got the Blues.
Just down the street.
House of Black and
Just
Blue.
Just down the street. So do they sound like Bruce Springsteen? Do
yes,
they look like Bruce Springsteen?
Exactly,
yeah,
yes, yes. Do? I mean, you feel like you're at a Bruce Springsteen concert. It is kind of crazy.
They look like it?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Now, is this good for their business or bad for their business, the fact that they said, yeah,
we'll
do that? No, they're not doing it.
It is interesting the way you described it, because why would you say yes, knowing ever the world knows what Bruce Springsteen thinks about Donald Trump. So
yeah.
That is interesting that they, but maybe they thought it wouldn't be a big deal. Maybe
well, I have an addendum. I have some information, and I have heard this elsewhere, and someone just texted this. They signed up to be part of the inauguration, not knowing who had won the election. Now, I don't know if that's possible.
Is that possible?
I don't know.
And it sounded like they were part of an inaugural group, like what, from New Jersey? I mean, was it some...
I can't believe that's possible, because the inauguration is set up by the party themselves, so...
Well, the official one, Bill, but there are a lot of inaugural parties. I mean, maybe there's...
I guess so.
And you'd have to book in advance, you know, may win, or maybe it was just the Republican Party that booked them.
Otherwise, people are already obligated, I mean,
right.
with the exception of Marie Osmond.
Yeah.
God,
right.
Poor Marie Osmond.
I know. See, I didn't hear that. I heard that she did an interview, and she talked about it, and then people assumed that she was going to do it, and then she put a statement out...
That she had not been
that
asked.
She's like, hey, I never said I was going to do this, and I'm not going to do it, and I don't get involved in politics, yada, yada, yada.
Right. Oh, I thought she said, I'll do it.
Because, you know, she's a little bit country, but she is not a little bit political.
No, no,
no.
She's not.
I feel sorry for her. Maybe we should have her on the show.
Marie. She'll back out at the last second.
Yeah, could you maybe. Have her bring Donnie?
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
my first crush.
Don't worry.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'd fight you for him, Judy Pilak.
He's still kind of hot.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Like we are.
Oh, yeah, I'd fight you. I'd fight you and I'd win.
We're still kind of hot, too.
I know, right? I think Donnie would dig us.
She never gives up.
74?
For people charting today's show, mark down 5 minutes to 11. That's when the show got sad.
Where did that saying come from, by the way? He would dig us.
We're as desperate as Marie Osmond. We're trying to hook up with her brother.
Right.
Oh, maybe she'll fix us up.
All right.
Goodbye.
Tattoo, welcome to Fantasy Island.
Thank you for gracing us with your presence, Judy. Always a pleasure.
Can we take a quick call or two? There's a lot of people that want to
weigh
like in on this.
We have like 10 seconds.
We don't have a whole lot of time. Take somebody just for a little bit.
Number, please.
Number 3.
Hi, Stephen.
Well, hey, good morning, y'all. How you doing?
Excellent. Couldn't be better, Stephen. What did you want to say?
Hey, I just want to say, you know, I'm kind of middle, right? More conservative than others, but
yeah.
I never stopped listening to Fleetwood Mac when they played for the Clinton inauguration. In fact, I still think they're one of the best bands ever. So I think liberals and the gay community are showing who are more closed-minded than others.
The fans should not be swayed by the mere fact that they would perform at an inauguration. That shouldn't sway a fan, you're saying, huh?
Correct.
Yeah. All right. That makes sense.
It does make sense.
Yeah.
You know, I like your music. I don't necessarily have to agree with your political views.
Right. Right. That makes sense. All right. Stephen, thank you.
Thank you.
Well said. All right.
Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. I forgot about that.
Solid
I love
advice.
Fleetwood Mac.
Very good advice. All right. We'll take a break. Steve has the news. And then the most romantic place in all of Chicago visits us. You'll find out what that is next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Where's the romantic music?
This is romantic.
You don't think
this is romantic? This is Al Green.
I guess, but...
Romance is his middle name.
I guess. All right, it's
Bill Left. I'm being told it's Daryl. Daryl is Al Green's middle name. It's not as romantic as romance.
It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder here, and really, nothing screams romance to me more than Geha's Cafe and Fondue. And with us right now is the man behind Geha's, Chicago's most romantic man. Do we have to say this?
It helps. I like it.
Jeff Lawler is with us. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Thank you for having us. Very good. Very,
who's
very
the
good.
Second most romantic man in Chicago, Jeff? You are the
Ronnie
first.
Ronnie Woo Woo.
Is it Ronnie Woo Woo? A lot of people think it is. Is it? Yeah. All right.
Jeff is the owner and proprietor of Geha's Cafe. It was named the most romantic restaurant in the country by USA Today. And I'm telling you, it is an experience in and of itself.
It is. It's an experience that have grown since 1965 as the first wine bar in the city of Chicago in Old Town. And then when we introduced fondue in 1971 at our present location, it has just brought people together with the music and the atmosphere. Fondue and our atmosphere is romance.
Were you with the restaurant in 1971 when that decision was made?
No, I was 9 years old.
All right, you were just being a kid.
Yes,
all right.
Yes.
So,
but I did like fondue at nine.
Who doesn't like fondue? All right, so when they made that decision, what exactly was behind it? Because at the time, I don't know that there was much fondue here in the United States, was there?
There wasn't. It's a fun story. John Davis had the first, well, starts the wine bar and then moves Geha's and has a full-service menu, burgers and spaghetti and chicken on at the present location. And one day, he caught his chef doing things with the food processor that he should not have been doing.
Are you at liberty to say those on the air, or is that something that would get us in trouble?
It was cutting special spices.
He was, all right.
Yes, he was grinding special spices.
Was that your guess, Wendy? That was not my guess.
No, that wasn't mine.
No, okay. No? And he, so John said, you know what? You're gone. And he had just experienced fondue in Michigan, and we've been doing fondue ever since. The cheese fondue, the entree fondue, and the chocolate fondue.
And see, that's where the misconception is, because when I was a kid, we can talk about the Welsh rabbit, rarebit.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rabbit in it.
No rabbit.
Stouffer's, the little red box, I believe, would have it. And it was very fun for a kid to ask their mom and dad to break out the fondue pot that they got on their wedding registry and never used.
Right.
And you'd cut up toast and dip it in cheese. And that's all I thought fondue ever was. I didn't know, like, you could cook meat, lobster, shrimp, steak, until I went to Geha's.
Well, the entree fondue course originated in the vineyards of Europe centuries ago when it comes time to picking grapes. You bring all your field hands out to the fields, and you got to pick the grapes at the right time. You don't have time to bring everybody back for a meal. So what they would do is heat up large pots of oil out there over a fire, and people would have a fanny pack of vegetables and beef or whatever, and they would have a stick. They would just stick their meat and their vegetables, put it in the oil pot, eat it quick, and go back to picking the grapes.
That sounds romantic, doesn't it?
It doesn't at all. And that's how did that? That's like, you know, a rich person's making s'mores, you know, sticking a hot dog on a stick.
Right.
How does it go from that to being such an amazingly romantic experience?
Well, people brought it in home, and at Geha's, we have perfected it. When you have the beef tenderloin, the lobster, the shrimp, the scallops, the chicken with the vegetables and the 8 house-made sauces, it really creates for a very nice entree where you're just dipping, you're cooking, you're creating. Every bite is different. It's a lot of fun.
When I was a kid, once every about 6 weeks, my mom would make fondue, and it was always beef in a ginger sauce, and the flavor was just so delicious, so overwhelming. Loved it.
Sorry, I'm eating.
That's all right.
You caught me.
That's all right.
What kind of cheese is this?
It's a Swiss Gruyere, a blend of Gruyere cheeses melted down in white wine with spices and just a touch of Kirschwasser, which is a cherry liqueur.
It's amazing. Will you talk? I'm trying to finish chewing.
For you. When you go to Gejas or any fondue restaurant, a lot of times all the courses will be fondue-based, your appetizer, your main course, and then your dessert. Are those separate...
a la carte?
Yeah.
At Gejas, we have a premier dinner. It's Gejas' complete fondue experience with the cheese, salad, entree, and chocolate fondue.
Okay. But I'm saying, like, is it all in the same pot, or do they take that out?
Multiple pots. Yeah, right.
That's where my mom was making the mistake, because then our dessert tasted like ginger beef.
Well, yeah, your chocolate had a ginger flavor to it.
This custard tastes like ginger beef, Mom.
All right, now, I'm not good at planning ahead, as you know, Bill. Right. I'm kind of last-minute Jane here. Valentine's Day is coming up. I know we're not into February yet, but it is Feb 14th. And people have probably been calling you and making reservations. You're probably filled up.
They've been calling us since March of 2016
for this Valentine's Day.
So, I've been with Gejas for 23 years now. And my first Valentine's at Gejas was shortly after I started. And I did not do the reservation seatings. People just walked in.
Yeah.
I was quoting a 5 to 6 hour wait for people, and they were saying, oh, that's no problem. It's worth it. I go, really?
Wow, that's impressive.
But ever since then, we've been doing the seatings. Nice, controlled, rich, warm experience.
Mm-hmm.
But we wait till the middle of January. We pick a day in the middle of January, which was yesterday, and we kick off taking Valentine's. Because if we didn't do that... we would be sold out in
years down the road.
I mean, months ahead, and it's not fair.
You're like the Hamilton tickets of food, aren't you?
We like to consider ourselves. Yes, that would be nice.
So here's the thing. You come on our show after the fact that the number was given out and people could call for reservations. So pretty much filled up. But you have figured out a way to please, I guess, three lucky listeners.
Yes. We have the three seatings. We have a 4 o'clock seating, a 6:30 seating, and a 9 o'clock seating. And while our 6:30 seating sold out yesterday, and we still have tables left at 4 o'clock and 9 o'clock, we're basically 3/4 sold out for those seatings, and we'll sell out today. We have reserved a table for your listeners, okay? And all they need to do, okay, is call right now. Call Gejas Cafe at 773-281-9101 and say, I want the WGN radio listening table, and let us know what seating you want. My management team is ready to answer any questions about the package that we're offering.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want it, it is yours.
So that number again, and people need to call right now.
773-281-9101.
And this is only for the very first seating and for the last?
Or no, 4 o'clock. I saved one for 6:30, we're sold out.
Look at you, Jeff.
Yeah, so prime time and then the 9 o'clock seating. And you guys have been great. You have put together a special gift for your listeners.
Well, we have a special gift, Jeff, Wendy and I. You know that.
You are a special gift.
Oh, come on. Everyone's blushing now.
Jeff actually put this special gift together.
I know he did.
But what is the special gift you speak of?
Well, it's going to be Wendy and Bill will be dining with you at the table, but in picture form. They will not be there live.
People tend to prefer that version of us. Guys.
My husband, Jim, prefers it.
It's a much more preferred version.
Honey, could you get me another headshot and then go out shopping?
And you guys have been so kind to donate a $50 gift card to the people that want to dine with us on Valentine's. So there'll be a little gift card there for them that they can apply to the extras, the extra wine, the extra champagne, whatever they want to do to enhance their Valentine's evening.
Good.
So 4 p.m., 6:30, and 9. You can call 773-281-9101. And that's probably already gone. We're not doing it here, so no. I can't see how many people are calling. But if you don't get through, keep
calling, and my management team will let you know.
You know what's nice about this? The spacing of the three seatings is you got a 2.5 hour span, so no one's being rushed. It's not a come in and eat and get out. We got more people to move in and move out. You're doing it.
Since my first experience, it was crazy. 5 to 6 hours, people were like, I want to be seated now, and no more of that. It's controlled. You got it. It's your table. Relax. Enjoy.
Good.
Jeff Lawler is with us, Chicago's most romantic man and owner and proprietor of Geha's Cafe. Valentine's Day coming up. I'm sure there are a lot of people that wait to propose to their loved one on Valentine's Day, and what a perfect opportunity to do it at Geha's. How many proposals have you witnessed?
Well, in my 23 years, I have personally orchestrated, assisted with over 300 couples getting engaged. Okay?
That's amazing.
And not all on Valentine's Day.
Not on all Valentine's. The most I have seen on Valentine's is seven.
Yeah.
Seven Valentine's, seven engagements. Between the three or four seatings that we've had at Geha's.
Do they take does the soon to be groom take the ring and put it on a little skewer and dip it in like the Gruyere, and then she's dipping in and she's like, what? There's something in my cheese. What is it?
Actually, that's a true story.
Seriously?
A true story that won an early contest of ours where a couple came in and he wanted to propose during chocolate. He put it on the plate of fruit. They're talking, they're interacting. She goes for a strawberry, goes through the ring, dips it in, takes a bite, and cracks her tooth.
They
had to go to the dentist afterwards. And this couple still dines there from time to time over the years. Okay, so that's a true story. But, you know, the fun part of my role at Geha's over all the years when it comes to engagements is we want people to call us up and say, hey, I want to get engaged at your restaurant. Let us assist you in having a great night, setting you up for success. And we like to create with you what you would like to do. Some people want to wait till the end. Some people say, let's get it over with.
So then you can enjoy the meal.
Exactly.
I imagine it's kind of a lot of tension builds when a guy knows, oh my God, I got to ask her.
Oh yeah. That's without a doubt. What is, not to be negative, but 300 pluses, has there been a minus or two? Has somebody tried to get engaged and it didn't pan out?
Actually, there has been a couple minuses.
One or two, yeah.
And one of the minus turned around to be a plus about a year later.
She just wasn't ready.
Yeah, that happens.
He stopped drinking.
He got nervous. He got very nervous, and he proposed with a pair of shoes.
What?
Oh.
Exactly.
He didn't buy a ring?
No, it was. And was this most Tom women McCann? Ask, like, well, who maybe. What kind of shoes were they? But he was very nervous. The story is long, but it's quite funny. And she said no, and she was very nice. We consoled him the rest of the evening, and then years later, I met the mother of that lady that was proposed to with shoes, and she said they got married. They got engaged a year later with the ring, and everything's happy now. They have kids. So,
oh, that is sweet.
That's a beautiful story.
We have to take a break. We're talking with Jeff Lawler, Chicago's most romantic man. He owns and operates Geha's Cafe, which really is the most romantic place that I have ever been to. And we're going to come back and continue talking. And I want you to check in and see if those seatings have been given away.
Okay.
Because he was lovely enough to give a little package deal. I got nervous when he said that you and I would be with them for this seating, because I'm like, I can't do fondue three times in one day.
I could. I'm all right with that.
All right. We'll take a quick break and we'll find out. There are some packages still available, and we'll find out what's in those packages when we come back and talk with Jeff Lawler. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder along with Jeff Lawler. He is just dripping with romance, that Jeff Lawler. Please, Kevin, get him a towel. He's dripping with romance. Geha's is the name of the restaurant. It's spelled G-E-J-A. Geha'sCafe.com is your website. The most romantic restaurant in all of Chicago.
Jeff, what's the where did Geha's come from?
It actually started as the founders of Geha's, Gary and John, their first initials, and they put a couple vowels together to come up with Geha's.
It sounds genius. So Scandinavian, doesn't it?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but then they came up with a wonderful story about Prince Geha's, a Moorish prince that in his young life, leading his troops, he won many battles, and upon his greatest battle, he served fondue. And centuries later, you can find that same great fondue in Chicago.
I love these tales of lore. I do. I like the folklore. It's beautiful. All right. Now, again, we have put together a package. Actually, Jeff Lawler has put together a package. And special seatings on Tuesday, February 14th, a 4 o'clock seating, a 6:30 seating, and a 9 o'clock. We have given away, I believe, all of them.
The phones are still busy at Gayhouse, so...
So keep trying.
Yeah, keep trying, yeah.
The number again?
Is 773-281-9101.
Now, this Valentine's Day dinner package, of course you have your Gruyere cheese fondue. I noticed a little sparkling wine. What's it all in this package?
Okay.
I'm stuttering here.
The packages are the same for all three seatings. And we start you off with the Swiss Gruyere cheese fondue with the bread, apples, and grapes for dipping the cheese with a salad.
Just so people know, on paper you say, I'm not sure a grape in cheese is my best bet, but boy, is it delicious. You brought some in and it's so good.
It's my favorite bite with the cheese.
Really good.
Yeah, the savoriness of the cheese and the sweetness of the grape is a great contrast.
Yeah.
Then the entree fondue, we pick our most popular dinner. It's the beef tenderloin, the lobster, the shrimp, with the assorted vegetables and the 8 sauces. If someone doesn't care for beef, lobster, or shrimp, and they want something else, or they want to go all vegetarian, we can do that. But we pick the most popular just to start with. Okay, and then we'll finish you off with the Belgium chocolate fondue, where we flame it. You'll roast marshmallows, and you dip pound cake and assorted fruits into the chocolate. We also include a glass of this rosé sparkling wine and for everybody. Each person gets it. And then tax and tip is included in our price.
Yeah.
We took a little savings off of the first seating, the 4 o'clock seating. So it's $85 for the first seating and $95 for the second.
Per person.
Per person, yes. So people can add flowers from Dilly Lily.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have a lot of people that like to get couples massages at Lincoln Park Massage and then come over in fondue. That's a pretty romantic
night. That's a great Valentine's Day.
Yep. Isn't it?
Hope Jim is listening. God. I get a card and a single rose from a gas station.
Yeah.
Yes. But Dilly Lily has arranged for 3 wonderful flowers, sets of flowers, bouquets that people can order right on Gayhouse's website. And we will have them on your table or however you would like them delivered to your date.
You've made it very easy, and I know you've just also added, you were telling us off mic, a new dessert. What is the new dessert?
It's a new dippable item into the chocolate fondue, and that's Rice Krispie Treats.
Oh,
you're going just for that, are you?
Didn't Snap and Crackle get engaged at Gayhouse a couple years ago? I read that in the paper.
There was the man love there, yes.
Good for them.
GayhouseCafe.com, GEJAS. cafe.com. They're at 340 West Armitage, and we don't have a lot of time, but you yourself, the most romantic man in Chicago, actually got engaged at Gayhouse?
Yes, I did. Just this past Christmas night, you know, after being with Gayhouse for 23 years and being a romantic as I am, I've always looked for that perfect love, and it took quite a journey. And 3 years ago, I met Darla Cummings, and we've courted each other, and the time felt right. Her daughters were around. My brothers and their wives were around. It was just a private dinner at Gayhouse on Christmas night, and we were able to sneak away at a certain point and went to the table on the other side of the dining room where we had our first date at Gayhouse, and I proposed there.
Darla, that's beautiful. You say yes, I hope?
Well, I had to. He's Chicago's most romantic man. How could I say no?
But then when the bill came at the end of the meal, weren't you like, hey, how did this happen? Yeah. What's with that?
I want to know how you got a table, Jeff.
I had to wait. We were closed.
Congratulations, guys. Thank you. It's wonderful.
Thank you. That is awesome. Congratulations. There will be love and Gruyere in your lives together.
Yes, there will be.
And really, if you can't make it on Valentine's Day, because it is a Tuesday night, and maybe people want to wait until the weekend to celebrate, any time is a perfect time and a romantic time to go to Gayhouse.
That's why we celebrate for the 11 days, okay, starting on the 10th and then through the 20th. We will have the place lavishly decorated for all. I mean, it'll feel like Valentine's all those 11 days. The music, guitar will be playing.
Blacklight posters?
Blacklight posters. And so people can come in anytime and have the same great romantic experience. It doesn't have to be on Valentine's Day.
Well, Jeff Lawler is the most romantic man in Chicago, Bill. You know what you are.
Second most romantic.
No, least. Least romantic. Oh. Congratulations, Jeff and Darla. It's really amazing to see a love blossom like that. It's about time, Jeff, you were on the other end of the proposal from all these years of helping other people do it.
Yep.
And again, the number to call is 773-281-9101. You can also go to gayhazcafe.com. Thank you so much for putting this
Thank
all together
you.
For our listeners.
Thank you. Happy Valentine's to you
And
both.
To you guys. Great to
Thank
see you.
Thank you very much.
A quick break, then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Boogie down, y'all.
You don't have to tell me twice. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. If you want to jump in, be part of the show with a question or a comment or a haiku, 312-981-7200. You can call us. You can text us. From time to time, I'm sure you feel this way too. You'll buy a product or a service and you'll say to yourself, I feel as though maybe possibly I'm being ripped off, like I'm paying too much for what I'm purchasing. You felt that way, I'm imagining, at some point, right?
Can I tell you, I feel like that almost every time
day.
I buy. Seriously.
Yeah.
Like if you buy, I don't know, a new dishwasher, you could drive yourself crazy by searching the internet and finding a lower price, so I don't do it because I'm sure it's cheaper somewhere else.
Right. No question about that. Over at businessinsider.com, they took a bunch of products that we all purchase, some regularly, some semi-regularly, and they told us what... Now, I'll tell you what's on this list that made me think of this immediately. I can't tell you the amount of money we spend on printer ink. You know, there's four of us in our family. Each of the four of us has different needs, and from time to time we need to print something up.
I thought you didn't know how to use the printer.
Oh, no, I can use the printer at home. I'm not good with the one here because they have a special arrow on mine at home that shows me which buttons to press when I need to. But we spend between $300 and $400 a year on printer ink, which seems a little bit much. So that made the list. Let me see if I can find that one immediately. Oh,
we
here
don't
it is.
Print as much as you do, evidently.
I don't know what we're not printing excessively, but I'll print out at home every once in a while. I'll print out a story for the show, and my daughters will have school projects. And then my wife just likes printing things. I don't know why. It says that the price you're paying for HP printer cartridges is somewhere between $13 to $50. Now, when mine go out, I don't know. I guess most printers are kind of similar. I've got four different compartments that printing ink needs to go in.
Four?
Yeah.
How big is your printer?
Standard size.
Is
four a lot?
Yeah, I have a black and white and I have a color one.
Oh.
I have two. Have you ever changed the ink?
Oh, yeah.
And you
several
have four?
Times a year. Yeah.
There's one a backup?
There's a large black cylinder of ink. There's a small black cylinder of ink. And then there's cyan, C-Y-A-N. And then what's the other color? Yellow.
How old is your printer?
1966.
Okay, that makes sense because the no, cyan.
It's about, cyan is like blue, right?
A blue-green. Yeah, my nail color
it's cyan.
Is that.
You got
that.
Cyan-colored nails. I think it's about 4 years old, 5 years old.
Because they,
Do they not make that anymore?
You have a single color ink cartridge?
I have large black, small black, blue, and yellow. And now that I think about it, I think there's a red one too. So there's five.
Kevin, have you ever heard of such a thing? You get a color cartridge and a black. Where do you find these cartridges?
Yeah, that's always been the case, hasn't it?
Adventure.
I have one color cartridge and one black cartridge.
How does your computer know what color to print stuff up? It's all one color in there? That's too confusing.
No, there are all the colors of the rainbow in one cartridge.
In one? No, I don't have that. Mine are all separate.
What, is this a lithograph machine? Do you have to print all the yellow first and then send your paper through again and the blue comes out?
If there's a story about Herbert Hoover that I want to share with the audience, I have to print it up at home and I bring it in. So, yeah, so it costs...
Wow.
The large one is like $20-something, and then the small ones are, I think, 16 or 17. It's really expensive.
That's cheap. I spend like 40 each.
Oh,
or
is it?
Maybe. I don't know. Obviously, we have different printers.
Well, on this, it says that HP, that's Hewlett-Packard, you're paying anywhere between $13 to $50 for that cartridge, but it costs them about $4, $5 at the most. So,
do you remember the like cartridge world? I don't know if they're still around, but you could bring your HP ink
and refill it.
But then HP says, we can't guarantee that it's going to print very well.
Of course
they're going to say that.
Right. Smart move. Smart move.
Wait, can Tony jump in about this printer issue? Hi, Tony.
How you doing, Wendy? Hi, Bill. And you're exactly right. I have an HP also. Mine has five cartridges. You have the bigger XL black, the small black, the blue, yellow, and you're missing magenta.
We don't print anything in magenta at my house. I won't allow it.
That's the purple color called magenta. But, yeah, you know what, though? My wife went online, and she found a place for, like, a quarter of the price. And it's really weird, too, when you put them in. It senses these aren't HP.
Right.
It might not work. It might not work right. Well, it works just perfect, you know.
Really?
For the price, yes.
Oh, you're saving tons of money that way. That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
And it goes through ink quite fast. I don't know about yours, but mine really goes through it pretty quick.
So fast. Like, I have to redo all those cartridges about once every 2 months. That's really fast.
Easily, yeah. So, yeah, try that, Bill.
All right, I will. I'll find it. Thank you so much, Tony.
Thank you. All right, I guess you have a better computer than I do.
Do I?
I've never heard of the separate colors. Carol, you can explain it?
I can. Separate colors. Now, I can't talk about pricing, but theoretically, it's the more economical. Because if you have a tricolor cartridge, and the chances are you probably use blue more than anything else. So when your cartridge runs out of blue and it still has the magenta and the yellow, you still have to toss the whole thing. Whereas Bill can just replace the blue cartridge.
Right.
And, yeah, so that's actually better. Now, as far as how they price those, I can't tell you. My guess is that they figured out that they can charge more for the individual cartridges, and thus you're not saving money after all. But I can't say that whether that's true or false.
We burn through the blue because I print up a lot of pictures of Smurfs for my room.
That's the same with me. Yeah, that's my problem.
Yeah.
Smurfs.
So that eats up all my ink.
Isn't that weird that, you know, someday we'll talk to Steve Burns and he had blue a dog, and wasn't there magenta a dog too?
Yeah.
Where's yellowy?
They don't have that.
Well, they will someday.
They don't have it.
Well, Carol, thanks for explaining that.
Oh, it's quite all right. And the name of that, of the blue, is cyan.
Cyan.
That's how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Okay.
C-Y-A-N. We call it blue.
I do too, but now you are totally technologically astute.
Sounds like it. Thank you. Well,
okay,
thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Carol.
Thank you, Carol. Boy, the Geek Squad's calling. They want you to hook up with them.
I'd love to.
All right. We have somebody in the ink business who can help us out. Hi, Mike. You're in the ink business?
Yes, I am. I work for a company that's the world's largest remanufacturer of ink products.
Oh, good.
So
you can say the name if you want. That's fine.
I'd rather not.
Oh, okay. All right.
He's supposed to be at work right now.
Okay.
Well, we make our products under several different brands, so you wouldn't know our company by our name.
Oh, all right.
Excuse me. But we make Staples, we make Office Maxes, Office Depots, house brands.
All right.
But the markup is a little out of whack, isn't it? Just a little?
Just a little. So most major printer manufacturers make all of their money, all their profits off the ink themselves, not the printers that they sell you.
Yeah,
they'll take a loss on the printer and make it up on the ink sales. So, for example, on a $50 cartridge that you're paying for from HP, it costs them $3 to $4 to make.
Yeah.
So, what remanufacturers such as ourselves do is we collect those original OEM cartridges and go in, clean them up, empty out the guts, put in new parts where needed, and fill them up with brand new ink and resell them to the consumer, saving you somewhere between 50 to 60% versus the OEM.
Oh, wow. That's a big savings.
It's a huge industry. It's about our company is about $1.5 billion, mostly in the U.S.
Yeah.
And so as the printing industry has shrunk over the past few years, as Wendy said, she doesn't print much anymore.
Yeah.
No one does. Everything's stored on the cloud, and we're much more reliable on cloud for our information. The printing industry is suffering, so the OEMs are being very aggressive on promotions and pricing and things like that.
That makes perfect sense. But to me, it is a miracle. The mere fact that you can print documents up that look professionally printed in your home on something that's the size of, you know, a cake tin. I can't believe that technology exists, but you do pay for it when it comes to the ink.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Appreciate it,
Mike. Thank you, Mike.
Anytime, guys.
I have a HP Envy 4520 all-in-one inkjet photo printer because someone asked what I have, and there was no option to put the different colored things in. And it's only like $80, and it's amazing. You can print from your iPhone.
Right.
It's pretty incredible, but it only came with the black cartridge and the tricolor.
And that's it.
I can't separate it. And I guess I save all of my printing for work.
Yeah.
And let the Tribune handle it.
Smart move. Very smart move. All right. We'll give you more of these. These are items where there is an incredible markup. One of them is printer ink. Find out what the other ones are next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. Bill is helping us determine that everything we pay for could be found cheaper elsewhere.
There's no question about it. We're getting ripped off. I hate to admit it, but we are. For instance, when you go into the theater and you buy yourself a bucket of popcorn, that's standard. If you're seeing a movie, you want some popcorn, right? It says here that on average, your medium popcorn is currently running you $6.50. What do you think it's costing the theater to give you a bucket of popcorn that costs you $6.50, Wendy?
Well, they're just paying for the container. Like,
pretty
if you were to
much.
Bring your own bag, I bet you could get them to fill up your bag.
Maybe.
It costs them 67 cents.
35 cents. And then the markup is they're charging you $6.50 for that same popcorn. That, by the way, is how theaters make their money. People always think it's on the tickets themselves. No, the bulk of that money goes to the studios who have made the movies. The theaters exist because you're buying concessions, you're buying snow caps and Sprite. That's where they're making their money.
When the kids were little, Jim took the boys to the movies more than I did because he likes going to movies and they are boys, so they shared an interest.
Yeah.
And he used to wear cargo shorts all the time and he would stuff his pants with juice bags.
Oh.
So he would buy popcorn for them, but then whip out the juice bags
save
a ton of money.
That's a very smart move. And now I know why he has the nickname Juice Bags. I was wondering why they called him Juice Bags. Now I know. If you want some higher-end designer jeans, truly.
I'd like a higher-end. Do they make jeans that give me a higher-end?
Let me see if it says here. No, it doesn't say here that they do. True Religion is one of those designer jean companies that's very much in vogue now. You'll find yourself paying on average for a pair of True Religion jeans $335. That's the going rate.
No, I will not find myself doing that.
That's what they want. They want you to pay the $335. But what do those jeans cost them?
$20
to make a little bit more, $50.
Okay,
but that's a fairly
decent
markup.
So do a markup to $100, and even that's like totally unacceptable for jeans. Who listening right now, I'm not Woodsy the Owl, would pay $300 and some for a pair of jeans?
A little over a year ago, I was shopping, and I've told you this. I've been told by my children I need darker blue jeans.
To update your wardrobe, yes.
Right? So in the window of a store is a pair of blue jeans that I don't know is True Religion. I just
blue
say to myself,
jeans.
Those
You're
look
really
like
cute.
Blue jeans.
Jeans. Just say jeans.
But in my head, jeans cost $39. That's what jeans cost, $39 to $49. And then I looked at the price tag, and they were $360.
And so you bought them?
No, you saw a streak, like a green streak of where I was because I ran out of the store. I felt dirty for even seeing the price tag at $360.
Why don't, if that bothers them so much that you don't have dark denim, why don't they take you shopping? Go to American Eagle.
They've suggested that. That might happen sometime in the future. We're looking into that.
Everything is a production with you.
You'll
when you're
enjoy
getting printer ink, why don't you go buy some denim
well,
jeans?
Well, I'm going to buy some Scion printer ink and then just throw it on my pants. I'll kill two birds with one stone. This one is obscene, Wendy. This one is nothing short of obscene. If there's kids listening or older listeners, I beg you, get away from your radio. You don't want to hear this because this is obscene. Your average college textbook in 2017 is now costing, are you ready? $232.
For a school textbook.
Right. And I've seen this myself because I live very close to Northwestern and there's a couple of bookstores there. And I say to myself, this must be a misprint. Textbooks don't cost over $200, but they do. The average cost of a textbook this year, 2017, is $232. I'm not exaggerating.
For one book.
One book.
No one takes just one class.
One book.
A friend of mine is a writer and used to write or try to write novels and then would try to sell them. And he said to me, my publisher said to me, stop writing novels, write textbooks, you'll be a millionaire, and it's paying off like crazy because of the markup of textbooks. So there, your cost when you're buying a textbook, 2017, $232. What does it cost the publisher to make that $232 book?
$42.
$10.75.
That is disgusting. No wonder all these kids graduate from college with student loans unable to make them buy a house.
I know.
You should see the prices of my son's law books for
how much
law
are those,
school.
Because,
oh, over $235. But
that's to be a lawyer.
I know, but still, it's crazy.
I know.
Over $235 a book?
Why can't they do the curriculum online like a lot of the elementary schools are doing?
Some of them are turning to that. More and more are turning to that because of these costs. Because enough people have said,
God,
you're gouging us. How can
Michael
how can
go to
be?
College, but I'm not buying him books.
Isn't that a
Does he need them?
No. You don't need books in college. Please.
You got to go use books.
That's the way to do it.
I don't like books that are flagged, though, as George Costanza would say.
What does that mean, books that are flagged?
Isn't that what he said when they were read in the bathroom?
Oh,
I don't like to use a used book. I like it fresh and pristine.
Okay, I hope your kid reminds you of that when he wants to buy his books.
I'm not getting him books.
Isn't that insane, though?
It's ridiculous.
Well, sometimes you have to hope the smart kid had the book before you, and then you're golden.
Did all the right notes?
I've done that.
Were you the smart
kid? I
remember in
high school, I just took all my notes in the book. I was the first one to use it. And I thought, well, I'll just give a little gift to the next guy. So all the answers.
So, yes, he is the smart kid, Kim. Thanks for bringing that up.
So my daughter goes to Dayton, and they have a deal where if you visit there, do an official visit, you get free textbooks for 4 years, $1,000 a year.
That's a tremendous savings.
If you go to an official college visit there, like where you register and
before
walk around.
Before you've decided that you're going to make that your college, you just have to go on a tour of the school.
We did a tour.
Well, if
you would get your books for free
at Dayton.
No.
Well, yeah. I don't know how many schools do it, but for there, so she did that, and she gets $1,000 worth of books for free every year.
That's not bad.
And that's a big
deal.
That's
a huge saving.
I'm calling Belmont University and said we were there.
Yeah.
We took a tour.
Yeah, if they can verify it, you're in great shape.
If they do it. Not many schools
not
do
every,
that.
God, that's amazing.
Dayton was the only one that I knew of, Steve, because Reese went there last year, too, and I remember that.
I'm thinking of going to Dayton now because of it.
Because of the books.
Yeah.
All right,
books you could read.
We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has coming up in the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's next. Thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder. This is part two of our Tuesday show. We'd love for you to call in or text in. We're at 312-981-7200. Very easy to reach us.
We're very easy.
I think you could say that's been said of both of us, both
not
in
recently.
Person and on the men's room wall. Can we go back in time 24 hours? The Cubs appeared at the White House because they won the World Series. I'm not imagining that.
And that was yesterday about this time.
Yesterday at about this time. President Barack Obama, president for only a few more days, Barack Obama, met with the Cubs and did a nice job of kind of summarizing the Cubs' season and then went out of his way to really talk about the highlights of the World Series. And during that, he singled out a bunch of players, pretty much everybody on the team. If you contributed to the Cubs' season or World Series, the president mentioned you in his speech.
Pressing most attention to David Ross, did you notice? That was
David
pretty
Ross,
cute.
I think got the most attention yesterday. I think so.
That was pretty great.
Don't you think because the president could relate to him the most?
Probably. Yeah.
He said they were very similar.
Both of them realizing that their days in that particular career were numbered, and But I said to you, I noticed while watching it that pretty much everybody who contributed in any capacity got their moment in the sun, except for Aroldis Chapman.
Which you noticed because that bothered you when he was picked up by the Cubs. You know what I mean? I wonder if that was standing out in your mind.
Aroldis Chapman is the hardest thrower in baseball. There's no doubt about it. He throws a fastball that has been clocked around 104, 105 miles an hour. That's pretty good. And he meant a lot to the team. There's no question about it. And he meant a lot to him in the World Series. There's no question about it. But if it were up to me, I would not have had him on the Cubs. He's got a very, very, very checkered past. Not the nicest guy in the world. You can Google it if you want. You can look him up on the internet and see what he's been
accused of doing, I guess you have to say.
May I ask you a question? Do you think the Cubs could have done it without him? Interesting question,
isn't
it?
Boy, that's tough. That's really tough. He was, there's no question about it, he was a major contributor. He really was. And they used him like crazy in the last several games. I'd be one of the first to tell you they used him too much. They burned out his arm. A guy who was throwing usually 104 miles an hour was getting it into the low 90s after a while.
That sounds funny that you even say that.
Right, because for most pitchers, that's not a bad day. I'll throw 93 miles an hour. That's not bad. But I felt at the time when they picked him up, and I'm sure you remember this, I was very much against it because I thought it would mess with the chemistry of the team. I was wrong. It didn't mess with the chemistry of the team. But I did notice that Barack Obama yesterday, while kind of singling guys out left and right, there was no mention at all of Aroldis Chapman. And there's a story today. There's several stories today about that. This is from a website called The Comeback. The Chicago Cubs' visit to the White House was already a headline grabber before it happened, even in a surprising move. The team decided to move its visit to Monday to become the last team that President Barack Obama would honor in the office. That was mentioned yesterday. Then Monday's event happened and more news was made. While President Obama was pointing out the various members of the Cubs World Series squad, he did not mention Aroldis Chapman, which, like, I thought at some point, even if he didn't want to talk about, because with most of these guys, he found a highlight or two and talked about that. But I don't even remember him saying the name, much less singling out a highlight or two. And he was, like him or don't like him, he was a major factor in the season, and he was a major factor in the World Series. So to not get a mention at all was kind of curious, I felt.
I think he ran out of time when he mentioned Ben Zobrist's wife. That was the extra person.
Guys' wives were getting mentioned. And Jose Cardinal, who I don't think has played baseball since 1978, was mentioned.
But he was an inspiration to Michelle Obama's hair.
Right.
That was really
true. And there was a litany. We discussed this yesterday. There were President Obama mentioned a bunch of Cubs from the past, a couple of which were there. Ryne Sandberg was there. Fergie Jenkins was there. Billy Williams was there. They all got a mention. So you go, well, at some point, he'll probably mention Aroldis Chapman. No.
Mark Grace, he mentioned, although not first name, just Grace.
Right. And I think even you pointed out Sammy Sosa, no mention.
Who's meant? He turned into a human vampire. Remember those pictures we saw? He was doing some skin lightening, and he got his eyebrows shaped very arched.
Yes.
Ozzie Guillen got a mention.
Ozzie Guillen got a mention.
Well, yeah, because he was talking about the White Sox.
Right.
So everyone in the world of baseball except Aroldis Chapman.
Everyone who has ever played Major League Baseball was mentioned yesterday. Johnny Walkenfuss, the backup catcher for the Detroit Tigers in the 1980s, got a mention.
Is that really his name?
Yeah, Johnny Walkenfuss.
Jamie Quirk
of the Kansas City Royals was mentioned.
I love when this happens, when we talk about old baseball and you and Bertrand throw down.
Steve and I could go till next Christmas.
I know, it's pretty cute.
Biff Pocaroba
of the Atlanta Braves.
We're just doing backup catchers right now.
Biff Pocaroba. And who was the Huffenfuss?
Johnny Walkenfuss of the Detroit Tigers.
God, names were different back then.
Right. Well, because of the war. All right, so the Chicago closer, Aroldis Chapman, was not mentioned. The move is likely, it says here in this article, and I don't know how you could argue with this, the move is likely due to Chapman's murky past. As mentioned, it appears that the president purposely omitted Chapman's name due to issues with domestic violence. The All-Star closer was suspended at the beginning of the 2016 season after an incident with his then-girlfriend that included Chapman allegedly punching and choking the woman. This isn't the first time that this has happened when a team visits the White House. President Obama snubbed U.S. women's national team goalie Hope Solo. I kind of remember this. When the team visited the White House following their 2015 Women's World Cup victory, with just days left in office, Obama continues to show his I'll do what I want mentality. It's kind of nice to see and definitely sends a message. You go, President Obama. So what do you think goes on behind the scenes? Obviously, all this has been put together in the last couple of weeks. They know that the team is going to be there. Steve, I don't remember for sure seeing Aroldis Chapman, but my guess is he was there. Do you remember seeing him, physically seeing him there?
I did not.
So,
but you know, the camera angle didn't show you much.
The camera angle showed President Obama and then about five people behind him. You saw Kyle Schwarber through most of it. You saw Anthony Rizzo.
Rizzo for sure. Schwarber, you know, as Barack would move, you'd see a little of Schwarber.
Right. But did he
Theo
mention
Epstein?
Did he mention Addison Russell?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, he did. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought there were others that he didn't.
Because Addison Russell was the youngest player to hit a Grand Slam in the World Series, so that got a mention.
And mentioned Jake Arrieta, who completely publicly said he wasn't coming because his mother-in-law was ill and his son had a dentist appointment.
Yeah. So does somebody say to Barack Obama, does somebody from a PR department at some point say, look, some of the guys coming in are fine, upstanding citizens, but one or two have a little bit of a history? Or does he know that? Does he
make
that call?
I think that's his decision. And he has two daughters and a wife, and perhaps that was his stand against it.
Oh, wait a minute, you guys. He didn't write that. He didn't, you know, that was hand, you know, given to him, I'm sure. I mean, he might have had input on it, but.
But for the most part, other people put together.
Sure.
Yeah.
I could see him dabbling in it, though.
Absolutely.
I mean, going, you know, let's mention all the players or.
But this goes much deeper than a speech. This is a purpose. You know, somebody says, without a question, this is a guy with a checkered past. And just by mentioning him, just the mere mention of glorifying what he did, he can, as much as I don't like Aroldis Chapman, and I don't, I really, when he was rumored to come to the Cubs, I said to myself, I want the Cubs so badly to win the World Series, but I don't like this guy, and I think he's bad for business. And I kind of wonder if that had anything to do with him not being re-signed. Oh, the side note is he made a gob of money with the New York Yankees to re-sign with the Yankees, and the Cubs weren't prepared to give that, so it became a non-issue. But I wonder if deep down they went, you know what, we got him for what we needed him for. We got mixed blessings with signing him. I wonder if we need that again.
I wonder if there are any regrets to doing it since he's not stuck around,
well,
you know, kind of in and out.
Yeah.
No.
You don't think so, Steve? No.
He did what he came to do.
As long as the rings fit.
Yeah. Right.
Amen. Yeah, you cannot acquit.
That's it. Right. Right. As the legend goes. Right.
God bless Johnny Cochran.
All right. And if you like it, you got to put
Cochran.
A World Series ring on it. Yeah. God bless all the Cochrans. They all deserve a blessing. Let's take a quick break, and then we have more show. Want to jump in? 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right. We were talking about President Barack Obama winding down his last couple of days as president of the USA. And he had the World Series champions.
Most of them. I know Jake Arrieta wasn't there. I don't think John Lackey or John Lester were there. I'm almost positive not. I didn't see him anywhere.
The pitchers can't show up?
No, I think they. Ryan said they weren't there.
Oh, did he? He confirmed that? But we don't know about Aroldis Chapman, who, as we said, was not mentioned.
I think that was intentional.
So if,
he was there.
Oh, he was there. All right.
Yeah. So then it's even weirder that he wasn't mentioned.
As I think people may have saw, if you were listening to this, you didn't see it. But if you watched it on any news outlet, you saw this. When the speech was over, the president did not so much a receiving line, but he kind of went through the guys and there was a handshake and, you know, a 10-second back and forth between each member of the Cubs and Barack Obama. So if Aroldis Chapman was there, how awkward would that moment have been for both of them?
But it's still awkward because he's thinking, okay, everybody's, you know, he's mentioning everybody who had something to do with the win.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute.
Right. I don't remember being mentioned.
That's when he should have pushed through the crowd, come up to the podium, and gone,
yeah.
Is this on?
Yeah.
I think you forgot about me, sir, president.
That would have gotten some national attention.
Yes.
Pretty sure it would have.
Well, it was a beautiful moment.
It was. It was fun to watch. And I rewatched it when I got home. I watched it again after seeing it in the daytime. Oh, you know what I forgot to tell you?
Did you hear that light bulb go off?
Oh. Bing.
Oh.
I have to tell you what movie I watched last night. And if you didn't know me, because you've known me a long time, I would think that you wouldn't believe me when I told you what movie I saw last night. But because you know me, once I tell you, even though it's almost impossible to believe, I think you'll go, oh, yeah, well, that's you. I totally understand that. But I watched a movie that I had not seen since I was probably 9 or 10 years old.
Old Yeller?
No. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you sitting down? Sit down even further.
Am I going to be surprised or am I going to go, oh, yeah, this doesn't surprise
one
me?
Can I tell her?
You want to tell her, Steve? Go ahead. Do you want to say?
Benji 2.
No, it was not Benji 2.
Oh.
Who saw Benji 2? Benji was the only thing worth seeing. There was a 2?
There was a 2. There might have been a 3.
One of two things will happen when I tell you what movie I watched last night. Number one, you'll say, I have no idea what that is, but I don't think you'll say that. Or number two is you'll go, I totally forgot that movie existed. How in the world did you find it?
All right, you've intrigued me enough.
Last night, for the first time since I was 9 or 10 years old, I watched the movie Skinny and Fatty.
I've never heard of that.
You don't know what that is? All right. Do you remember on Saturday mornings at 11 on Channel 2, they would do the Children's Film Festival with Kukla, Fran, and Ollie?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. So there was a movie from Japan called Skinny and Fatty about two boys. You can almost guess what their physical shapes were.
One was thin, one was heavy.
One was right. So that came
up. It worked
up
for Laurel and Hardy.
It worked big time for Laurel and Hardy. So every year there would be movies that were in kind of constant rotation that they would show once a year.
Were they full-length movies or 10 minutes?
That's the thing is I watched this last night. I found it on YouTube. And don't even ask me how I found it because—
You Googled Skinny and Fatty?
No, I was watching something else, and then you know how on YouTube there, if you like this, here's a dozen things that you may not even care for.
And then 5 hours later.
Yes. One leads to another, leads to another. All right. So I've been looking for this movie seriously for decades. I've been trying to find it first on VHS, then on DVD. I can't find it anywhere. And it was on YouTube, the whole thing. And in my head, I'm like, well, it's a movie, so it's got to be an hour and a half, right? No, Skinny and Fatty is 42 minutes long, start to finish.
Well, allowing for commercials on TV, that makes sense.
Right, because the Children's Film Festival was on for an hour. So, yeah, so 42 minutes. So do you remember it at all?
I don't know. I got to look it up to look at them, and maybe I will know it. It sounds familiar.
There were so many moments of the movie that as I'm watching, I'm like, boy, I haven't thought about that scene or that little instance with the boys, with Skinny and Fatty, since I was 9 or 10 years old. But I remembered almost all of it fairly accurately. And it really is, I have to say, because it was made sometime in the early 50s, it's a beautiful movie about acceptance. Because what you have there at the beginning is you have one of the boys, Fatty, who's new to the school, and the teacher assigns Skinny to kind of take him around and be friends with the other kids.
Why didn't she hook him up with another one who was weight challenged?
None of the other kids in the movie have weight problems. And actually, I have to say, through most of the movie, the kids and the adults, more the adults, are so mean to this kid, to Fatty.
Well, look at the name.
Incredibly mean. The school at some point holds like an Olympic Games with all the kids in the school, and they make Fatty participate in all the Olympic Games. And not only is that mean, but there's constant scenes they show the audience, which is mostly comprised of adults because they're like the parents of the kids. And they're laughing and pointing as Fatty, you know, like they
can't climb
they
up the rope.
Yeah, there's that. There's a scene where they do a lap around the track and they beat Fatty by 6 or 7 minutes. You know, all the other kids are done and having a snack. And then Fatty kind of lumbers across and they show the adults just pointing and laugh. I mean, they're so mean to him. But then in the end, as you would imagine, he becomes the hero. I don't want to give anything away.
Spoiler alert, not seen Skinny
and Fatty yet from 1951. But he ends up being, you know, the town hero. But it was so cool to see this movie again from the Children's Film Festival.
So that film, the CBS Children's Film Festival, just so you know, was hosted by the Kuklapolitan Players.
Right. You had Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, and then her husband Bert Tilstrom was underneath manipulating them.
And his name is Burr, not Bert.
Burr.
Yeah.
Burr Tilstrom, because it was cold where he grew up.
Can I tell you something?
I think he grew up in Saugatuck, Michigan.
Yeah, I know he's from the Midwest.
There's a little statue of him there.
Fran was the human, and then you had Kukla and Ollie, Oliver J. Dragon, and they're not very attractive puppets.
No, back then there was no impetus to make puppets attractive. They were almost nightmare-like.
They really were.
Yeah. But they, on a weekly basis, for some reason in my head, they were on 3 weeks out of every four. I can't remember for the life of me what replaced them on that fourth week, but I seem to remember the Children's Film Festival being on every 3 weeks, and then they would take a week off. But then they would show you movies from all over the world, and it was one of my favorite things on Saturday morning. It was the last show because it went from 11 till noon, and then at noon you had, you know, college sports.
Yeah.
So it was your last children's show. But boy, every Saturday I would just be glued to the TV watching shows like, you know, movies like Skinny and Fatty from all over the world.
I would prefer you call him by his real name, with which
Komatsu.
Is Oyama.
Oyama was Fatty.
And Komatsu
was Skinny. Because there are, in the movie, which I said lasts 46 minutes long, there are 11 scenes that end with Fatty yelling, Komatsu! Across the schoolyard, because Skinny has abandoned him for some reason.
This is a sad tale of woe.
No, you know what? If we were to switch seats and I would hear what I was saying, I would say, why would you subject yourself as a child or now an older child to that movie? But it really
had a happy ending.
Not only did it have a happy ending, it taught a beautiful lesson of acceptance.
Steve, Skinny and Fatty fan, are you?
Yeah, I remember it well, along with H.R. Puffin stuff and all that.
He's your friend when things get rough.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Kukla, Fran, and Ali, didn't one of those puppets smoke or smoke or steam or something?
Yeah, the dragon on Dirty Dragon smoked.
One I knew, but I thought one of Kukla and Fran's did also.
Did they also smoke?
Not the dragon. I thought it was the little guy. That would be Kukla.
Kukla was the little guy.
Cartoon Town, yeah, the BJ and Dirty Dragon. But I thought Skinny and Fatty was like a series because it was on every Saturday. So what did they... it's so long ago, you know, I'm an old man, but...
No, it wasn't a series. It was a standalone movie. And like I said, it was in like a heavier rotation. Sorry to you, Fatty, but it was in heavy rotation and they would show it like once a year.
Maybe they showed it in parts like 15 minutes and then 15 minutes of next Saturday.
Oh, maybe. That could be.
Yeah. I think they were a team.
Yeah?
A kid team that did more than one movie.
Skinny and Fatty?
Like the unbelievable tales of Skinny and Fatty.
David Spade, whenever David Spade would talk about movies that he made with Chris Farley, he would always say, it's Skinny and Fatty Go to the Circus, or it's Skinny and Fatty in the Old West. You know, all the movies they made together, that's how he would describe them.
We would watch that, we'd fry some bologna and have fluffernutters.
That's a good Saturday.
God, the memories you're bringing back, Steve. Thank you very much. We have to take a break.
Yeah, we must take a break. Other people, I know we have to do the news, but I'm glad other people remember this movie. It's not just me. All right, a quick break, some news from Steve, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Thank you so much, Steve Bertrand.
You're
Bill,
welcome.
You were talking about Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Yes.
And what was Fran's husband's name?
Burr Tilstrom.
Burr.
B-U-R-R. No, Burr Tilstrom.
Bob, you knew Burr?
I did. He was my neighbor. We lived at 1413 West Sherwin, which is a block west of Sheridan Road in East Rogers Park.
So how long? What era would this have been, Bob? How long ago?
Well, I'm 73. Let's see. I got married when I was 23, so 50 years ago.
Wow. Nice man, I hope?
Terrific guy. And there's a big plaque right in front of the building. It's a big courtyard building, three-story building. We both lived on the first floor. He was across the hall from me. And they put a nice sign in front commemorating his talent and creativity with so far as that show.
So if people are not aware of this, Burr Tilstrom and Fran Allison was her name, long before the Children's Film Festival, had been doing this for, I think, 25 or 30 or 35 years. They were very well-known innovators. They were really talented people.
At least. Your show is great. We love your show. And say hello to Steve Bertrand. This is the Bob from Misericordia Choir Director.
Oh.
I know Steve and Lou. Lou Manfredini.
Who do you like better?
Steve just asked who you liked better.
I love to listen to Steve at noon, and then I turn you guys on. I'm with WGN all day long.
Oh, that's
nice.
Well,
thank you, Bob. We appreciate it.
You guys are great.
Thanks,
Bob.
Thank
you so much. How sweet is that?
The other movie I remember most, I remember a bunch of them. And like I said, it was the International Film Festival. So you had all movies that were made, you know, in all corners of the world. There was a movie called Hand in Hand that was a British film about a little boy and a little girl who were not supposed to be friends because the boy was Catholic and the girl was Jewish, and yet they do become friends. So there was a lesson learned there.
Was that the story of your parents?
Yeah, it was about my mom and dad. Yes. Actually, now that I think about it, that was a home movie. That was not on Kukla Frank and Ollie. That was my mom and dad showing Super 8s.
Can I play a little of the Skinny and Fatty? Because we were looking at it. I don't remember
this.
You
don't remember ever seeing this?
No, but this is this might be when he calls for his friend. They have him doing all these things that he's unable to do because he's a heavy kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And now he's playing by himself. I can't cue it up to that one part.
And the teacher forces the skinny kid, Komatsu, to hang out with the heavier boy.
Listen to the niceness of kids today.
You, so you still here?
Oh, wait.
Your friend won't come. You'll be late for school, lazy thing.
Lazy thing.
Yeah. His family's mean to him sometimes.
That's terrible. But these kids come up. I just ruined the part. This might be it. Boys come up and ask his name.
Yeah.
And he says his name.
Yo-Yo Ma.
No, it's not that.
Just Yo Ma. It's not Yo-Yo Ma.
I'm sorry, Bill. I completely lost
That's
this.
All right.
I was trying to cue it up. But they said, what's your name? And he mentions his real name. And they said, that's not what we call you. We
right.
call you Fatty.
Fatty.
It's horrible.
There's a scene early on where he has just moved to this town. And like I said, Skinny has been assigned to be his friend. He doesn't want to, but he's been assigned it. So all these boys walk by his house to pick him up on the way to school so they can all walk together. And he is eating breakfast. He's having a good, hearty breakfast.
How hearty?
So they say, it's a pretty good-sized breakfast. The rest of the family is just
dozen
having
eggs,
just like a little bit of rice, and he's got a full meal in front of him. So they go, come on, we're going to be late for school. And he goes, just a few more minutes. And he just keeps eating and eating. And they go, what are you doing? Are you eating like that? And they all laugh. And even his family sitting around him says, is that how they know you as the boy who's always eating? And he gets a big smile on his face and he goes, yeah, that's what I do. I eat, you know.
Poor kid.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, if I heard what I was hearing now from me, I'd say, what kind of a sadistic tale are you trying to force us to watch? But it really, it's a great lesson. I thought this as a kid. It really is a great lesson about how somebody that you think won't ever be my friend ends up being your best friend. So it pays off. And it, Kevin, we're okay to put this on YouTube. We can put it on our Facebook page, on Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on Facebook, if you want to see it, or you remember it as a child, Skinny and Fatty from Channel 2 on Saturday mornings. It's on.
I didn't realize it was dubbed in.
Yeah, it is dubbed in.
And they make them sound even meaner when it's in English.
All the other kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to send the link. It's 46 minutes. You'll never get back.
I'm telling you, I know, maybe I haven't done a good job of selling it, but if you watch this, you will be moved. There are several times where you'll go, your heart will go out to this kid because you'll recognize. I mean, this was made like in the early 50s, 51 or 52. But, you know, bullying is really, today, it's a major, major issue. But back then, I think it was more, I know this will sound terrible, but it was more commonplace and almost acceptable.
It was, totally.
Nobody was watchdogging it back then like they are now. But I think you'll recognize when you see this, if you don't recognize the movie, you'll say, yeah, even though that was Japan in 1951, that's kind of what we were all going through as kids.
All right, I'll watch it.
All right.
Can I ask you mentioned Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, and I have a feeling I'm the only one who remembers this. And it was a local thing. We all grew up around here. You grew up in Oak Forest.
Yeah.
I grew up in Brookfield. Bertrand is from Minooka.
Yeah.
Do you remember, where is he from?
I'm from Minooka. I don't remember where Bertrand's from.
He's real mysterious on his origins.
No, he's not. I just can never remember.
Oh.
I can't remember where. You're from Minooka?
Yep.
Thought you were from Shanahan.
Same thing, same town. I went to Minooka High School.
That's like the Homewood Flossmore of that area.
Okay.
They've accepted each other.
Like Deerfield or something?
No. He grew up
in Mokena.
No.
Where's Steve?
He's at Starbucks now. Otherwise, I would ask.
All right. All right, when he gets back.
All right, but it's somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Somebody knows. Do you remember Pico Puppets?
No.
They would come to our school, and it was they would wear black leotards, and it was kind of along the same veins of Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. They would have like a little makeshift stage, and the ladies would be in black leotards, and they would do their puppet show, and it would come visiting to your school, and it was called Pico Puppets, and no one remembers this.
Did I dream this?
No,
I'm sure it probably happened. What was the show? Was it a... Was the show a story you recognized, or was it original material?
I think original material, and they would just that you're having an assembly today. Everybody go to the gym.
Yeah.
And I remember hating sitting on the floor because I was wearing a skirt back then.
Oh, Mantino.
See where I'd confuse that with Manuka?
Yeah.
Who called to tell you that?
Lou Manfredini.
Oh. Do we have a prize for him?
No, but Bob from Misericordia just mentioned him.
Yeah.
So look at Bertrand and Lou are vying for who is more popular.
I know, it's a network.
Thank you, Lou, by the way. But does anybody remember Pico Puppets? That's all I want to know. I vaguely
remember.
Were they
a local? This was a local troupe of puppeteers?
Yeah, and it so reminded me of Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
So with Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, and I don't know about Pico Puppets, it was legitimate puppets. It wasn't marionettes, not to slam the marionette industry, but it was people like you know
I don't
traditional
remember. I was so busy trying to keep my legs together because I wore a skirt and we had to sit on the gym floor.
I'm sorry, would you just say that again for me?
What are you, back from Starbucks? Do you remember Pico Puppets? Did you have anybody called Pico Puppets that would come perform at your elementary school? In
this was every year.
Where's
they came
he from?
By
not Manuka.
Mantino.
Oh. I'm from Mantino. No, but we had a pretty vigilant police department. So,
no, this was planned.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We had every year a representative from the Thomas Organ Company would come to our school and play the organ and convince us that our home was not complete until we had a Thomas Organ.
So they had a sales pitch come to your school?
Yeah, every year.
We had a guy, I'll never forget this, and I was in fifth grade, Mrs. Ivy's class, who from the Chicago Tribune. Who came,
what did he do?
He talked to the kids, to us, about reading a newspaper and showed us how to fold a newspaper.
Oh. You know, into, to refold it, right?
Well, how to fold it into like the narrow rectangle so you could read it on the train. I'm thinking, I live in a farm town. I don't know what a train is.
Can you teach me how to fold it like that?
Yeah, you know, it's like open it up, fold it in half and in quarters again, so you're just holding an eighth.
That's a useful tool.
And
look, he's a newsman extraordinaire
right
now.
I remember that from fifth grade.
That's excellent that they did that.
Thomas papers will live forever.
Papers will go on forever, Steve. Don't worry about it.
Please, somebody remember Pico Puppets.
Did you have somebody from the World Book Encyclopedia come by every year? We had that every year.
Yeah,
an assembly to try to sell us on.
Again, why did the schools agree to that? That Pico Puppets wasn't trying to get me to buy a fake stage and make my own puppet show at home, even though I did.
What were they trying to get you to do?
It was just like a school assembly. Like sometimes you'd have singers or whatever. This was, I'll never forget the lady because she just wore all black. It was like black leotards and a black shirt. And she... I just really remember this. I'm the only one that does.
One year, Buffalo Bill came to our school to tell us tales from the Old West. And
how
I
did
pointed
you
out
get
to
him?
My teacher that Buffalo Bill would have been long dead. This was 1972.
Oh, not Buffalo Bob.
Oh, I
no,
got
Buffalo
that.
Bill,
sorry,
not
I'm sorry.
From Howdy Doody. So I explained to my teacher that it was impossible that Buffalo Bill could be there if he was alive during the Old West. And then he explained that he was Buffalo Bill's great, 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 great grandson. But I'm still not 100% sure.
Don't talk to John Williams about Thomas Jefferson because you're going to ruin everything.
No, I don't want to do that. I know. All right, a break and then more tales out of school from us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's Bill and Wendy, and we're just kind of strolling down memory lane here. And we were talking about Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
You're the puppet.
That's what I had to listen to during the break between you and
Kevin. And I had a puppet shouting match.
Aren't you happy I'm the mature one, Wendy?
Well, you would be participating too if you were down here.
No, I wouldn't.
They were doing fatty, skinny puppets.
Yeah, you're the puppet.
You're
I thought
the puppet.
Fatty and skinny was about joints. I didn't know it
Wendy,
was. Sorry.
That's not nice.
And then, so we're talking about these Pico puppets. I don't know if anybody else remembered this.
Actually, we weren't. You are.
Steve, isn't it time for you to go home? Good God.
To what city? Mantino.
Don't care.
All right.
Bill mentioned, is this the time he does this to me every day?
Steve, it was around about this time.
You mentioned something about who came to your school to try and sell stuff?
A representative of the Thomas Organ Company came every year, usually in April,
It was a big school assembly.
Everyone in the school got to watch this man and other students play songs on the Thomas organ, and then he would mention that no home is complete without a Thomas organ,
and
that
we should
bring home a brochure to our parents. Yeah,
that doesn't seem right.
Maybe not.
Somebody said in spring of 2002, we had a first responder come to talk to our school and told his story. A month later, he was arrested. He made it all up to sell books.
Oh.
Steve said, who came to your school? Was it a newspaper?
Yeah, someone from the Tribune.
See, now that's cool.
That's
useful.
Good.
But yes, I was talking about Pico puppets, and I think it's a figment of my imagination. Ted, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Pico puppets. I grew up in Elmhurst, and yeah, we had them come, and like you said, it was a big assembly. Everybody had to go to the gymnasium or wherever and sit there and watch Pico puppets.
So I'm not imagining it. Do you remember the woman all dressed in a black leotard?
Yeah, it was more than one, though, I thought.
Yes.
It was like a group of two or three of them, and they hid behind the curtain, and they did the puppets.
The Dance of the Seven Veils.
And they didn't try to sell us anything, did they, Ted?
Well, after school, but no, not really.
All right, thank you. It's just good to know I'm not crazy. I don't think that's right for somebody to come to the school and try and sell you stuff.
I think that maybe the school may have gotten a kickback. Like on every Thomas organ that was sold, maybe the school got 5 or 10% of, you know, the profits, maybe.
Again, does that seem right?
Why would the school do that? We also had Congressman Ed Derwinski come by every couple of years.
What was he selling?
Well, this is what he was selling, and I was one of the first to figure it out. He would open and end each presentation by saying, make sure you tell your mom and dad how much I care about you and that I was at your school explaining how the government works, you know, so that we would go home and say, hey, I know the election's not for another 5 months, but Congressman Ed Derwinski stopped by the school. And he got into some trouble later, too, by the way.
It's very common.
Yeah.
With politicians.
Yeah.
Puppet shows were my favorite. They did Paul Bunyan and other tall tales. They did do a lot of... I don't know that it was original.
One year, they did a production of The Miracle Worker at our school. So some local theater troupe came in and did The Miracle Worker. And there's a scene where Helen Keller and Annie Sullivan are on the ground wrestling around. And the crowd went wild. It wasn't supposed to elicit catcalls from the audience, but it was like a Ronda Rousey match. Everybody's just screaming and yelling and applauding and stuff like that. And we had a stern talking to from the Monsignor after that, that that's not the way you behave at the theater.
You know,
some of our Thomas organs, forget it.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
It's funny that that's not the way you behave while watching theater. My son Michael is a senior in high school, and they're all going to see the Magic Flute at the Lyric Opera House tonight. Yeah. And I was trying to talk him out of it because it's 3 hours and 20 minutes in German. He doesn't understand German, but he wanted to go.
Yeah.
And the email that came out from the teacher is like, dress better than you think you should, so a suit wouldn't be a bad idea. And it's very common in opera, if something's funny, you can giggle reservedly, but
right,
don't like guffaw. And it
right,
was really funny. These are high school seniors that have never
right,
been to an
they
opera.
They should know, but it's hard. Yeah, I get that.
So what if there's two women rolling around in a fight during this opera?
You should have seen our school. Like, first graders through eighth graders are loving that. Like, the rest of the play, it's like, oh, come on. And then this scene happens, and they're going bananas. And you could just see the teachers going, oh, this is not gonna, this is not going to go well afterwards. Monsignor was not pleased.
All right, we have to take a break. Steve Bertrand, who's a proud local boy from Manteno,
yeah, Manteno.
Right? I'm sorry, Manteno and Manuka, are they even near each other?
You know, they're both south of the city, but
yeah,
they're very two distinct, very proud villages.
Yeah, Manuka's the
smaller and less important.
Well, more relevant to WGN. Superior in every way.
So you started? This is how it starts.
We can both agree that it's better than Bolingbrook, right?
Absolutely.
Or not Bolingbrook. I'm sorry. Where are you from, Wendy? I forgot.
Brookfield.
It's come full circle.
See?
Yeah.
Brookfield, Bolingbrook, Manuka, Manteno. And it's nice to know that Steve's mean to everyone.
Yeah.
What did I do now?
Nothing. Just
right,
saying that Manuka wasn't as good as Manteno.
No.
It isn't. It's pretty great.
Well, Lou Manfredini called in to say that that's where you were from. So it's all coming full circle.
He gave your home
circle
address,
he
Steve.
Did.
That
I hope
weird,
that's okay.
All right, we got to take a break. Steve has the news, and then there is more show coming your way next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law. Wendy, as somebody who breaks the law regularly, you know that the laws differ from state to state. What is legal in one state is illegal in another. Nobody knows this better than you. Am I right?
I like to adhere to the law pretty much.
Over at MSN, fake news, they have put together the law that they feel in each of the 50 states is the most absurd or craziest.
And these, they compile lists a lot like these, and these are laws that I guess are technically on the books, but they're not necessarily enforced.
Yeah, I would, going through the list yesterday, I said to myself, I'd be shocked if any of these are enforced. So you name the state, and I'll tell you what the law is. Each of them are hard to believe. We won't have time for all of them, of course, but just you pick the state, I'll tell you what the law is.
Shall we start with us or
end
with
us?
Yeah,
we might as well start in Illinois. Illinois' law makes a lot of sense because I know this has been a problem for a long time. In our state, in Illinois, it's legal for minors who are in culinary school to drink alcohol.
That doesn't seem right.
The drinking age, of course, here in Illinois is 21, but because of this provision in the law, they say if you're younger than 21, but you're studying to be a chef, have at it. Take a drink or two. You've earned it.
Because I know you use it in cooking a lot, but as you're making a white wine sauce, the alcohol part of it kind of burns out.
Yeah, right.
So what, you can just sit there and swig the bottle as you're... Oh.
Perfectly legal, as long as you're in some sort of culinary school.
Do you know that would have changed my career path had
I
known that?
You'd be a chef today.
Totally.
Right. Now, they don't say in here, like, if you're, you know, if you're seven, you can't just start drinking.
I wouldn't have drank at seven.
Not at seven, but at 8 or 9, probably.
Double digits.
10. That's fair. You give me the state. Whose law do you want to hear?
Boy, let's go deep into the South. Let's do Tennessee.
In Tennessee? I would imagine some of their laws are, some will make sense and some won't in Tennessee. All right, in Tennessee it says it's illegal to share your Netflix password.
I think that's illegal in all states.
Everywhere? Well, certainly Netflix would frown upon it. Right. Although
you get four people,
yeah,
depending on how much you pay.
Right. There's different levels.
Right.
That you
how
can,
many things can stream at the same
right.
time.
Yeah. But there are Netflix rules and then there's the law.
The law.
Like the police aren't going to come after you for doing it.
It says here the law is directed at hackers who sell login credentials in bulk. There are websites. I'm sure you've seen these websites where depending on what the website you're looking for, you can buy a password for a fraction of they would charge
you. How do I get hooked up with that?
It's illegal, Wendy. I can't help you with that.
Not in Illinois.
Are you in culinary school? There's a provision, no matter what the law is, if you're in culinary school, there's a way around it.
All right, let's go Indiana.
You want to do Indiana?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do the, you know, surrounding communities.
Now, I'm at liberty to tell you before I read Indiana's law that Indiana is a state that works.
That's against the law.
To say that?
In Indiana.
It's illegal. Now, you tell me, because I think this law should be not just in Indiana. This should be a law nationwide, if not worldwide. It's illegal to ride a horse above 10 miles per hour in the state of Indiana. A lot of them have a shutoff valve if you're riding a horse. At 11, your horse just, it locks up. It won't let you go.
Palomino converter.
Palomino converter. Did you know that?
What, now, is that where a lot of the Amish communities are? Is that Indiana?
There are Pennsylvania's Amish country.
But there's a town.
There are some in Indiana. There's Amish people
Arcola
there.
Arcola or something? Is that in Indiana, Steve?
That's Illinois.
Oh, okay.
But there are Amish communities in northwest Indiana.
Indiana. Yep.
All right, so I could see more people would be on horses.
Here's what the law says. No horse shall be driven, in quotes, at a speed exceeding 10 miles per hour. Due to high-speed horse racing, is that an issue in Indiana?
Like you would drag race a car.
They would do it with horses, I guess.
Just get out of the way.
Yeah, that would be a simple. You don't have to enact the law. You just say if you see a horse coming at you fast.
Move.
Get off to the side a little bit.
All right, what about Wisconsin?
You want to hear one for Wisconsin?
It's against the law to dislike cheese.
Well, you joke, Wendy, but just go to Wisconsin and yell out, I hate cheese, and watch what happens.
I would never utter those words ever in my life. I love cheese.
You were so close. You knew it would be dairy-related. It's America's Dairyland.
Yeah.
You know? Here's the law in Wisconsin. This is what it's considered by MSN to be the strangest law in Wisconsin. Butter substitutes are banned without permission. Whose permission?
So like in a restaurant, they can't serve promise. It has to be just butter.
I think it has to be pure butter.
I'm for that. And now they say butter's better for you anyway.
But did you say this is Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Wisconsin.
Yeah, I actually knew that because...
Did you really?
Well, you know, the dairy farms up there, they have a big...
Oh, they're very serious about it.
Lobby, yeah.
And Steve, do you know the answer to this? And I don't remember the specifics, but, you know, we go over there often for frozen custard. Love frozen
Most
custard.
People go there to sightsee or go to the Dells.
Yeah,
the
we
Lefts.
Can have that. We like our custard, and we like it cold. So we'll drive up there and have a frozen custard.
And come back?
Come back, yeah. And there was, I was told, some sort of law about, because there's custard places everywhere in Wisconsin, but it's hard to find an ice cream place. Everything's custard.
Is there that much difference what custard has eggs in it?
It's the butter fat content is like three times the size in custard that it is in ice cream.
That's why it's creamier and better?
So creamier and so good. Yeah.
It's oh, so creamier.
It's so good.
What about gelato? How does that rank?
I'm trying to think if I've ever even seen gelato in Wisconsin. I think that's banned. I don't think you can have it. Apparently, it says here, nothing is better than Wisconsin butter. A public eating establishment may not serve margarine as a substitute for butter unless requested by the customer who is in fear of allergic reaction. So if you can, if you have a doctor's note that says,
so if you just want to lose weight, no can do.
No, not here. Thanks, but no right. thanks.
I prefer to see butter on the table
as an option.
I
right?
just want the butter.
Yeah.
If I'm going out, I'm gonna go eat butter.
You know, it's the funniest thing. When I was a kid, I don't remember what year margarine became an option, but I remember all of a sudden there you had a
parquet.
Yeah, those were the ads, right?
Butter.
So my mom switched everything to margarine. We weren't going to have butter anymore. And then after a couple of years, when I'd start going out on my own and I had butter, the difference was just amazing. I mean, no offense to you margarine lovers out there, but butter is a billion times better.
I don't know. A nice chiffon tub.
You like that more?
The chiffon was good.
More than butter?
Mantequilla. Everything's better with blue bonnet on it.
So true. So true.
I buy butter with canola oil now.
What's because of the benefit of?
What is it? Less cholesterol.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, yeah. All right, we've got more of these. The craziest laws, the most bizarre laws in each of the states. We'll take those next. Stick around and Spill and Wendy on WGN. That's right, Wendy. Judas Priest on WGN, just like it's always been. Over on MSN, fake news, they've put together what they consider to be the most outrageous law in each of our 50 states. So far, nothing too outrageous, I don't think. How about this? In Alaska, you can't put an animal in the back of an open vehicle. That makes perfect sense.
In what state?
In Alaska.
But everybody puts their dog in the back of a pickup. You shouldn't, because they can jump out.
Or just fly out somehow, right? If the car's going fast enough, couldn't it grab your animal and knock it out of the car?
Not if they have a seatbelt on.
Right. All animals must be seatbelted in. In Arkansas, you cannot honk your horn near a sandwich shop after 9 p.m.
Why? Isn't the sandwich shop probably closed after 9 p.m.? What does it matter?
You know how you do a thing, you've been doing this for years, that around 10 o'clock, you'll drive by a Jimmy John's and just honk, and then you'll drive all the workers home. You've been doing that for about a year or two.
That was not for
air.
You
cannot do that in Arkansas. Please don't even attempt it. In Colorado, it's illegal to keep a couch on your porch.
That's not right. My neighbors have a couch on their porch. Like, legitimately, not like waiting to be picked up.
Right.
It's there.
It's just
it's waterproofed, yeah. And it's a special paint that you can paint over fabric, and
yeah.
It's a couch on their porch, and I
and
love it.
And it's all seasons?
Yeah.
It's out there all year long?
Yep.
In Colorado, they'd be thrown in the hoosk. They would be doing time, hard time for this. So I hope they're enjoying themselves, those felons.
Boy, we started the show with 23 Skidoo, and now you're saying Hooskow. You're pulling all these words from the past and making them popular again.
Yep. In Delaware, oh, this is sad, Wendy. I don't know how either of us would earn a living. In Delaware, it's illegal to sell dog hair.
Who?
You know the dog hair market is at an all-time high. You know this. State residents of Delaware are banned from selling the hair of a dog or a cat. We wonder how much money residents used to be able to cash in with all the hair that they had left from their couches and sofas.
Who buys it?
I'm not sure.
Do they
why
make little
would...
wigs for poor for little bald... dogs and cats that are going through chemo?
For bald dogs, yeah, you make a hairpiece.
I don't understand that at all.
Even if it were a thing, was it ever bad enough to where the people of Delaware said, this needs to become a law. We can't just say this. We need to enact a law based on this. I don't know why it's such a big deal there.
Tim wants to comment on a strange law in Indiana. Hi, Tim.
Hi, young lady. How are you?
Good. How are
good.
You?
Good.
Oh, you guys are great. I love you.
Thank you.
In Indiana, it is against the law to be caught carrying a live fowl after dusk.
A chicken, a turkey, pheasant.
A goose.
You know, as bizarre as it sounds, I think there's logic to it, because when it was passed, if you got caught after dark, after dusk with a chicken, you probably stole the chicken.
That's a good point.
Oh, yeah, I guess so, yeah.
So there is some logic to it, but the one that has no logic to it is I was stationed in Virginia with the Navy. There is a law in Virginia that it's against the law to whistle underwater.
How can you whistle underwater?
I don't know. But more than that, why would you make a law? Who would catch you? Who would hear it?
So
the fish complained. They were trying to sleep.
I hadn't thought of that.
So if you're at a beach there, a cop strolls by, he'll go, I wasn't hearing the Andy Griffith theme there, was I? Because it sounded like the Andy Griffith theme underwater. No, I swear, I wasn't whistling underwater. Wow, how about that? Well, thank you, Tim.
Well, you said you hadn't heard any bizarre ones, and I think that one's pretty bizarre.
The weirdest. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim. We appreciate it. And we were talking about butter and margarine.
In Wisconsin.
And Bertrand made a really good point that with the dairy farmers there and the unions,
yeah,
it makes sense that they could only serve butter at restaurants unless a customer asked for a substitute.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, any information on the butter?
Well, back in the day, and in keeping with your old-timiness motif, it was when Olio was to catch the jammers.
That's when they enacted the law.
You couldn't have or sell butter or margarine in Wisconsin, and they used to make runs across the border that they called Olio runs.
Really?
Yep, they had to go across Illinois to get Olio. They couldn't even get it in Wisconsin.
I forgot they used to call it Olio, yeah.
Because, I only know that from crossword puzzles.
Oh, yeah, right. Butter substitute.
Yeah.
Four letters, Olio. Because the livelihood of so many of the people there in Wisconsin was such that why would you want your competition right there? So eliminate it. That's brilliant.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you
so much, Kevin.
Appreciate it, Kevin.
It's like, you know, prohibition for Olio.
For dairy products.
That's crazy. Judy wants to comment on this, too. Hi, Judy.
Yeah, you know, when he said that, I remember Olio runs because... I'm in Dubuque, and people would come across from Wisconsin, and they'd buy 5 or 10 packets of the Olio, but it came white, and you
Not
had
yellow?
To color it. No, it came white.
Why would that be? And what's in the coloring that they wouldn't want
to? Because then it would be another deterrent for you wanting to buy Olio.
And they only colored it to make it look like butter. It wasn't naturally yellow.
God, exactly, you learn something new every day on this show. Not from us.
Not from us.
There was a little bubble of, like, a gold-colored oil.
Yeah.
And my sister and I used to fight over who got to pinch that bubble, because then you had to knead the color into that white oil to make it look yellow. So you may have, like, streaked oil on your table. It was the
No one wants that. It was the bee's knees.
Oh, my God, this is so funny. All right, well, Judy, thank you for that information. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
I'm telling you, we learn something from Steve Bertrand every day,
constantly.
But the listeners, that was a goal of ours to, you know, learn something on the show.
Sure.
Again, not from us.
No, doesn't happen that way. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve with the news and then the music of Olio Speedwagon. When we return, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Wendy Snyder here. It's Bill Leff. And there is a particular someone who likes to tweet a lot.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
There's some Twitter in the news that I want to share with everyone. Out of Maryland, a school system employee from Maryland who had a lighthearted quarrel with a student on Twitter over the student's spelling has been fired. Here's what's going on. Katie Nash tells the Frederick News Post that she was fired last Friday afternoon from her $44,000 a year job. A Frederick County Public School spokesman confirmed that Nash had been let go without providing details. Here's what happened. This Katie Nash ran the school district's Twitter account.
Yeah.
A lot of schools have them these days.
Sure.
On January 5th, a student tweeted to the account asking if schools will be closed tomorrow. And they spelled tomorrow T-A-M-M-A-R-O-W. So no two R's.
Yeah.
And T-A instead of T-O.
Yeah.
And Nash responded from the district's account. But then how would you learn how to spell tomorrow? And she spelled it correctly.
Yeah.
She says she was not told to tweet anyone after the interaction. She understands why she was let go, and she didn't want to be a distraction to the school system.
Wait, I don't understand why she was let go. Why does she understand why she was let go?
I understand why she was let go. It's kind of a snide remark coming from the school district's website.
How old was the kid that tweeted this?
They don't say.
Because if my guess is, all right, it's a great
school. I think
it's
funny.
We've established that. It is funny. But aside from being funny, a kid at that age should probably know how to spell the word tomorrow. So she wasn't bashing the kid.
Yes, she was.
She was, well.
She was totally bashing the kid.
She didn't say, I mean.
She was like, if you don't go to school, how will you learn
how
to
spell? Which is true. It's accurate.
Maybe it was, maybe Siri, you know, how she auto-corrects things sometimes.
Yeah,
I don't know.
She would auto-correct it correctly. She would put the wrong spelling in.
I don't know. Sometimes I ask her to do things and she puts complete, like I was talking about bobbleheads this morning and Siri put bottleheads.
Oh, that's different.
I mean, sometimes it can be changed.
All right, so they, with no prior history of belittling children by
you
way of...
You think the school district website and the Twitter account is okay to belittle students regardless of their age?
If she wanted to rip this kid for not knowing how to spell the word, she could have really done it, you know? But she, I mean, in a good-natured way, was saying, no, you are having school tomorrow because it'll be a chance for you to improve your spelling skills. I don't see any problem in anything she did. You do? You think that was too much?
I think that coming from the school district, they probably shouldn't be doing that.
Being critical of a kid?
Yeah.
If this was critical of a kid? Boy, I think fire. I mean, imagine if we had a caller who said something and you corrected them and then they called you upstairs and said, you can't do that with callers. We have to let you go.
Well, typically listeners correct us.
More times than not.
So,
right.
I got to find out the age of this kid because now this really has something to do about it.
What would be the age where you would think it would be inappropriate to do what she did or appropriate to do what she did?
I don't think the school district should be coming back. The school district should be kind of professional about it. Like, no, there isn't. There is school tomorrow.
Yeah.
Thanks for your concern.
Right.
I just think that's how it should
be. There is school tomorrow and spelling class goes from 9 a.m. till 2 p.m. Be there. T-H-E-E-R-E-E.
I think it's funny, but I don't think it's... She's...
No warning. They didn't say to the teacher, hey, from now on, if a kid misses a word in his tweet, just let it fly. Just let it go.
She got a lot of support on social media, more than 1,000 retweets and 1,000 likes, and she became the subject of her own hashtag. It was hashtag Katie from FCPS, which is the school district, and later hashtag Free Katie also appeared in students' Twitter feeds after a report from a local TV station that Twitter access had been taken away from her. While she was happy with the interaction she had with the students on social media, Nash said she understands the school system's decision.
Wow, she's much more understanding than I would have been in the same situation.
But what do you do? You're fired. How understanding can you, I guess, do you badmouth them and then you probably don't get a job from another school district again?
I'm already wondering, will she have a hard time getting another teaching job? Because when they say, how come you're not at this school? And she goes, well, I tweeted, I'm fired. Will that hold her back from getting another teaching job? It's bad enough to lose one, but if she can't rebound and get another job, then it becomes even worse.
I don't know. Here's the thing that is really bothersome. After the tomorrow thread, Nash and the student in question, who spelled tomorrow wrong, exchanged other tweets, and the student later wrote that he didn't even mind Nash's original reply didn't take it personally.
That's even worse.
That is worse. She was told not to tweet anymore after the initial attention. She still had access to this particular school's Twitter feed. She continued to tweet calendar updates and things that had already been posted through Find Out First, a county school news alert system. And later that day, she was asked if she had time for a meeting. And then she was given a letter that she had been terminated.
Was everything in the letter spelled correctly?
Boy, I would have circled everything that wasn't. Nash said there was never a conversation about what the tone of the account was supposed to be.
That's terrible.
Yeah, if the kid wasn't bothered by
it. Right, he didn't seem bothered at all.
I think it's funny. I just almost feel like I'm so used to the school district being professional about it that...
I guess so. And the kid, it doesn't say anywhere that the kid's parents were complaining about this. The kid was all right with it, but it didn't say his mom or dad were upset. That's not listed in there anywhere?
No. Because I wondered if the parents would call and that did it.
I wonder why the school was so quick to make action on this.
Hi, Dee. What do you think about this?
Well, I'm a social media strategist, and I advise businesses and organizations about what they tweet, what their tone needs to be, all that kind of good stuff. One of the things that that got me when you guys were talking about this was the fact that she was being sarcastic as a representative of the organization. Now, had she been doing it under her own Twitter handle, it might have been a different story. If the school or the school district had been off the cuff or a little offbeat every once in a while, otherwise, it might have played into it. Now, if they have a policy in place, then that's one thing. If they don't have a policy in place, they might have a lawsuit on their hands.
I would think so.
With her getting fired. So it's one thing to be offhanded with your remarks or have a cartoon on a page, on a post or a tweet, and have a little off-cuff remark with it, but not in response to someone who's asking a question. I would have totally blown that kid out of the water out of my personal account,
right?
But not out of the school account.
See, that's the only difference I feel.
Because it represents the school in some way, shape, or form. So, Dee, being a social media strategist, what would have been the correct response if she's using the school's platform to answer back? The kid said, will there be school tomorrow? Tomorrow spelled incorrectly. How do you answer that and not be overly sarcastic?
I would have probably just said, yes, there is, or no, there isn't.
Yeah.
I probably would not have made a comment about the spelling. Because, like, my company name, I left out the vowels on purpose on the back half of my company name. So if the kid was trying to use a shorthand for tomorrow, he failed. But maybe that's what he was trying to do.
Well, he spelled it...
Maybe he was just typing it and he didn't look at the autocorrect. I see posts like that all the time.
That is totally true.
I post for other companies all the time, and I always have to check my spelling because I'm not posting on my behalf. I'm posting on their behalf.
You represent them at that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I have to make sure I'm on their message, not mine.
And the kid was not doing homework either. I mean, if he wrote tomorrow wrong on a report, yeah, he should be corrected.
Right.
Right. Right.
All right. So just to get to the bottom of this, you think that the firing was just or unjust?
I wouldn't have fired her about it.
That does seem very severe.
If they had a social media policy in place and she signed off on the social media policy, there could have been justification for it. But if there's not a social media policy and this was her first boo-boo, then maybe I would have given her a written warning and said, please do not reply to any personal tweets in that kind of manner. But if the parents didn't complain, if the student didn't complain, you know, I'm not an attorney, I'm not an HR, I'm a social media strategist.
I don't know that I would have gone to the extent of firing the woman.
That seems like some rash actions.
Yeah.
You know, if they said, hey, you know, you're representing the school, try not to be so snarky. And if she did it again, then she cooked her own goose.
Yeah.
But
well, we appreciate the call, Dee. Take care.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
Have a great day.
You too. And a good tomorrow, spelled correctly.
I think Linda says it best here. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
Well, I think her response was funny. It was done with a sense of humor. And schools aren't really as strict as they used to be.
Right.
And I can guarantee that that student knows how to spell tomorrow for the rest of his life.
I imagine you're correct.
Thank you, Linda.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. All right, we'll discuss this.
That's
further.
My answer right there.
Perfect. Want to jump in? 312-981-7200. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you in just a minute or two. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy's telling us the story about a teacher who got fired for kind of an unusual reason.
Yeah, Frederick County Public Schools spokesman confirmed that Katie Nash was fired last Friday from her $44,000 a year job. She ran the school district's Twitter account in Frederick, Maryland.
Nice of them to put her salary in the paper, by the way.
That's something else.
Why would you do that?
That is pretty terrible, unless she said it, because she did give an interview. And she said a student tweeted to the school's Twitter account on January 5th asking if the school would be closed tomorrow. And tomorrow was spelled T-A-M-M-A-R-O-W. Completely wrong.
You missed by a lot.
Nash responded from the district's account, quote, "But then how would you learn how to spell tomorrow spelled correctly?"
I think that's brilliant.
It's really funny.
She should win the Nobel Prize for that.
Is this Rakesh? Hi, Rakesh.
Hey, Wendy and Bill. Excellent show. I always hear your show.
Thank you, sir.
In fact, many a times I sit in the parking lot of my clients and let me hear the end of this.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Well, I work in an industry. I'm not going to say which one, but a friend of mine was let go for a very trivial thing, for misspelling on an invitation, something. And they said it was not according to company standards.
Yeah.
But the real reason we all knew was that that guy wasn't working. And to prove that thing would have been very hard. So they let go for a trivial thing, like a misspelling. So it kind of sent me down memory lane. I said, oh my God, Tom was fired for this very reason. And the real reason is something else, really.
I think you're right.
It does seem such harsh punishment for one thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. But and mind you, even the lady, Nash, she's saying, I understand. But she doesn't want to burn her boats with the board or with the school district to get another job, because she knows in her heart exactly what she did.
Yep.
And this is just an excuse to let her go.
Yeah, they must have been keeping an eye on her and just saying, boy, the next thing that happens, big or small, that's the last straw. Uh-huh. I agree with you.
There you go. There you go.
Well, thank you.
Good job, Bill and Wendy. Thank you very much for making my afternoons very nice.
You're more than welcome. We're glad you're listening. Thanks, Rakesh.
That's the best caller ever.
Of all time. So I'm sure this was more body of work, right? There must have been something in the past that happened, and they're keeping an eye on her going, if anything else happens, big or small, that's it. We're getting rid of this girl.
It just seems like the school wants to maintain a professional atmosphere on their Twitter account.
Yeah.
I think it's very funny.
So what would they normally put on their Twitter account? Is it stuff like what? The sports scores from the teams that play there?
Yeah, my kid's high school has a Twitter account. They do have fun with it, though.
One of the teachers is celebrating a birthday, so they might mention it, that kind of thing?
No, nothing like that? Like, you know, basketball game tonight in the main gym at 6:30.
Yeah.
Maybe a final schedule or something.
Oh.
Just events that are going on.
No room for sarcasm.
I don't know.
Sarcasm Club was meeting in room 803. Would they even mention that? Or
probably
would that be against
not.
Their own policy?
That would be against their own policy. Hi, Marcia. How are you?
Fine. Wendy, would you clarify something? Did you say in the story that the teacher had been warned not to continue to tweet, and she did?
No, I think later she was, I had gone to another story, and after the original exchange, she said, you know, don't tweet anymore. And then later that afternoon, she was called into the office.
Wow.
And let go.
But she continued to tweet after she was told not to.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I know that is.
Because I thought you had said, I thought when you originally told the story, she was told not to continue to tweet, and she continued to have a Twitter go back and forth with the student.
You know, there is some truth to that, because she said after the Tomorrow thread, Nash and the student exchanged other tweets. So it did.
Because if she was warned not to continue to tweet and she did,
then you got a problem.
She may have been fired for that.
Yeah.
Not because of her original tweet to the student.
But I wasn't getting the fact that once she was told lay off the tweets that she did. It seemed from what you read earlier that she just stopped.
Okay.
Well, here we go. Nash said Friday she was told not to tweet anymore after the initial attention, but she still had access to the Twitter feed for the school district. She continued to tweet calendar updates and things that had already been posted through this news alert system. So she was just kind of
doing the job,
pasting, but they told her not to tweet anymore, and she did continue to do it.
So that may be why she got fired, rather than the initial tweet to the student.
Because
I agree with you that if all she did was what you said, that seems pretty harsh.
To fire her for that one offense.
Right.
For that one offense. And so there has to be more to the story than just what they are reporting.
That seems very plausible. It really does. Thank you, Marcia.
So, thank you.
All right,
so
have
much.
A great day.
And they had to, you know, at some point go, that's really funny, but we don't want that on the district website.
Right.
And she says they told her to not tweet anymore on that account, but she still had access to it and was just posting, it seems like cutting and pasting things that were on other websites. But she did kind of go against what they said.
But isn't that her job to...
But they said don't. Maybe they were thinking about what they wanted to do.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. That seems so extreme to me. It really does. Do you have time to take caller two? You'll end the day feeling good about yourself. You don't want to?
It's not me.
Oh, it's not you? Oh, just a caller complimenting you.
Hi, Brian. How
you,
are
complimenting.
You?
Hey, how are you? I always remember going to Six Flags, and I heard your voice.
It's not you.
Giving
it's
instructions not... to all the people riding the roller coasters.
I think that's Laura Wittick, who used to work on the radio here in Chicago with Stephen Gary, or Mark Carmen. I'm not sure which it is, because he's got a sexy voice, too.
Weren't you the voice of Willard's Whizzer, which is Donald Trump's favorite roller coaster, from what I hear?
Thank you, Brian. I really appreciate your call, though.
Sure. You got a sexy voice.
Thank you so much. I'm going to pass that along to Laura Wittick.
You should. You definitely should. We'll take a break. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.